ocean around. Demons fluttering around my face, showing no emotion. Shackled by my sins and expecting no return. Here there is no penance, my skin begins to burn.
So I held my head up high. I didn't hate that world inside. Don't infuse yourself.
Hello, this is William Fink. This is the Christogenia Open Forum. It is Monday, October 4th, three quarters of the year gone already, 2010. Thank you for joining me. I hope somebody wants to talk. This is an open forum, and without talkers, we can't have an open forum, can we? I don't have a whole lot of material prepared. That was Creed and My Own Prison. I like that song because it's somewhat biographical for me. But whether we're in prison or not, we sure as hell create our own prisons, even when we think we're free, right? We find ourselves locked in the same in the same paradigm year in and year out, create our own prisons out of the idols that we worship and the bad habits that we have and the sin that we won't profess and confront. I won't get into that too much. I was I've been preparing. I don't have a lot of material because I've been preparing for this 10-10-10 event along with the rest of the work that I normally do. I think I found out some looking at some of the documents of the founding fathers, I just stand in awe. It's amazing how much we have lost in our knowledge of the reasons why this country was founded and the real attitude that its founders had. But I read a lot of documents the past couple of months, the Virginia Bill of Rights, some arguments from James Madison, who was an absolute genius, some biographical material about John Hancock, John Adams, that thing. Some of the things I read many years ago and didn't realize the impact of, well, when I was a kid, and a lot of them I read for the first time. And it's a damn shame. I only went to school for 10 years, but I think if I went to school for 16, I probably wouldn't have had the opportunity to read these documents. It's just absolutely incredible that the lack of knowledge in our educational system, the lack of real reading, and because of that, the inheritance that we forfeited. It's just, I'm personally awestruck. Okay, I see. We have a few people that want to speak. Bruce and I'll recognize him. I thought I saw Matt there a minute ago, but I guess he that maybe. Oh, there's Matt. I'm sorry. Hello, hello Matt. Hello Bruce.
Hey Bill.
Hello Bill. Hello.
How are we doing?
Not too bad. I think it's a really good subject that you touched upon here. Something that I'm pretty familiar with.
Yeah, right. But there's a whole. I mean, there's a ton of information out there that's just laying there. And as far as I'm concerned, it's not even used. It just lays there. That everybody thinks they know about John Adams, or Thomas Jefferson, or James Madison, but I've read a lot of information that I've never heard on the Christian right. It's amazing what they think they know, so they don't read. It seems to me, it's really a tremendous body of literature. It's just and the Jews are able to get their anti-Christian rhetoric and their arguments off time and time again, and make them look credible. And they have no credibility whatsoever.
No, absolutely not. You are so right about that. The problem is that they have so been able to get within our educational system so that, what people think they know about the history of this country, they absolutely know nothing. They only know the names. That's it. That's the only thing they recognize.
Basically, that's very true. They might know a few dates and the names and the song about the shores of Tripoli and the halls of Montezuma. And that's probably about it.
Right. Well, I can tell you from personal experience. I mean, when I was in school, I was a huge history buff. That's probably one of the big reasons why I'm here. It's one of the big reasons why I left Catholicism when I was 15 years old. It's probably even a bigger reason why I quit high school 6 weeks before I graduated. Sounds kind of silly, but, I mean, nevertheless, I still got my diploma. I mean, heck, I had enough credits to graduate by the time I started my junior year, so it really didn't matter anyway. But I was a huge bookworm. My dad he was in the military. He wasn't a military man, but he did work for the government. But my dad was in the military during the Korean War, and his job with the federal government, it was scientific. He wasn't a Fed agent or anything like that. And he thought that our government was the greatest thing since sliced bread because of its history. Now my I wouldn't say that my dad was that acutely aware of our history, but just the, you know, the basic premise that he grew up with as to what this country is and supposed to be was what he instilled in me. And my love of this country kind of caused me to go to the libraries and do a lot of reading and research. I think I had told you, Bill, that, you know, I read the autobiography of Benjamin Franklin probably when I was in 10th grade or something, and I really enjoyed it. But that was when I started reading all these older books, doing my history projects, is when I found out that, you know, they're not teaching this stuff in school. And the more I read, and the more I was finding out that not only weren't they teaching us the proper stuff, but they were out and out lying about certain things. And I just absolutely became so disenchanted with the educational system. Not only that, the entire stuff against my grain, I just couldn't tolerate it anymore. I didn't care how close to graduating I was. I was so fed up. I was gone. I was out of it. But in the process, you know, that didn't, you know, it just made me even more interested in founding of our government and what it's supposed to be like. And that soon led me to joining a militia and starting a political watchdog magazine, and one thing leading to another. And I'd say that it all brought me to CI. And what amazes me the most is that CI here absolutely encompasses everything that I have ever touched on in my life that I considered to be right and true. And I'm very, very glad to be here. I can't imagine being anywhere else.
Well, we're glad to have you here, man. Yeah, you know, it's funny that they're always trying to say that the founding fathers weren't Christians. The founding fathers weren't Christians, but I could prove that every one of them was a Christian. And I'll be going into that in detail on John Hancock, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, and John Adams. And not only were they Christians, they were racists. And not only were they racist Christians, but they were anti-sectarian and anti-established priesthood. I have learned that the founding fathers are us. I really believe that, and I mean from a theological viewpoint, of course, that their Christian philosophy was our Christian philosophy, and I'll be going into that with documents and citations at great depth, and it amazes me that they claim that these men weren't Christians because they weren't really mamby-pamby little church boys that wore Christianity on their sleeve and praise Jesus every day. And I was out digging in the garden yesterday, and I got this thought and I'm going to use it in the program, that I would prefer to consort with the man who was critical of miracles and critical of the sects, that the sects and the different, you know, cults in Christianity, but who adored the moral precepts of Christ and his commandments, rather than consort with a man who believed in miracles and prayed that Jesus would cure his herpes.
Right. And that's Thomas Jefferson.
and Franklin. And Adams. It describes all three of them.
Wow.
And those three are the primary authors of the Declaration of Independence. And I'll prove all three that they were from their own writing. I mean, it's incredible. That they were Christians. It's incredibly obvious. It's all over the writing. And James Madison was an absolute. I'm convinced he was a genius and he was extremely bright. And he was trained as a theologian and in Hebrew at Princeton. He was also the father of the Constitution. He wrote the Constitution, basically. So here we have a man trained for the to be a cleric that didn't become a cleric. He became a lawyer instead. Well, we have a man that knew. He was a professed Christian. He knew Hebrew. He knew the law. If he studied Hebrew and theology, he studied the entire Old Testament. So there's no doubt in my mind that the Constitution is modeled on that same idea of republican government, where authority comes up from the people. I know we see the theocracy, and that is true, of Yahweh as coming directly from God, but Madison also believed that. But when we look at the government that Moses created in the wilderness, that had the habits imprimatur from Yahweh, it was the day-to-day government that consisted of leaders of tens and leaders of hundreds and leaders of thousands, and that is basically the way the constitutional government is modeled.
Yeah, I always thought that. I mean, that ever since I can remember, that was one of the things I would stand on my soapbox about, was that was my biggest claim, that the Constitution, the cornerstone of the Constitution, was the Bible. And nobody would have been able to convince me otherwise. I mean, I was aware of that when I was 15 years old.
Well, it's absolutely true. That there's no doubt, and I'm going to and endeavor to demonstrate that fully on attempt. I'm really looking forward to doing these programs.
So I can tell you, we're all stoked. I have to share a little bit with you guys, especially since we're touching on the educational system and how Judaized that is. My daughter brought home some material in which it laid out how to write an essay. It gives the essential layout, the introduction, the body, blah, blah, blah. And on another section, it gave ideas for topics. And there was quite an extensive list. And I thought it was kind of funny that they felt they actually had come up with such a big list of topics. I think, if anything, they should have just thrown out a couple examples. And as part of that list of topics, what they included was ones you could not write about. At the top of the list, abortion. Next on the list, death penalty. How absolutely ludicrous is that? Cannot discuss those topics in school? That's just insane.
That the establishment doesn't want any dissension. That's the way it is. That they're trying to, the progressives are trying to really, that they're really making a huge endeavor to crush all political opposition and voices of dissension. They did the same thing in the Bolshevik Revolution, right?
Oh yeah, there's no question about that. I mean, it's just anyone who's a true Christian or even has half a mind to consider themselves a Christian these days, they should be, you know, everyone in my school district should be reading this stuff and being up in arms. Who are these people to be telling our children what they can and cannot write about and discuss, especially such topics that need to be discussed? But it's, you know, it's painfully obvious why.
We can't have any free thinkers, Matt.
Heck no, Tom.
Well, that's what it is, and they don't want school kids. That they don't want these kids affected by the conservative arguments or the Christian arguments, and hear it from other kids and be swayed by it, and find that there are other people who think like they do. Yeah, you know, they're supposed to suppress those Christian ideas in school. They're supposed to suppress those evil conservative ideas.
I'll tell you, I'm also amazed. My son, we just sent him to college. He's going to Lebanon Valley College. It's supposed to be a pretty liberal school, but a very good one. Heck, it costs more to send him there per year than I make in a year. Thank goodness he's intelligent and got most of it paid for. I thought for sure that he would really hate a lot of his professors. But one professor in particular, and apparently this guy's from Texas, so I already like him. they had a debate on basically communal living, which is how he put it, instead of saying communism, and self-reliance, instead of, you know, free market or self-responsibility type deal. And he separated the class into, you know, obviously into the two halves. And according to my son, less than a quarter of the class had chose the self-reliance, and the other three quarters picked the communal living. So, of course, you can already see how indoctrinated all these kids are. And to make a long story short, I'm utterly astounded at the teaching that this professor laid out. He summed up the class by saying to those kids who picked the communal living, he said, "So, if you truly believe in this, then I want to see a show of hands as to who would like to accept their grade at the end of the period, at the end of the semester, at the end of the class, whatever, by me lumping all you guys' as grades in together, taking an average, and everybody gets the same grade." Not one of them raised their hand.
Yeah, that's sharing the wealth, right?
Right.
The kid that gets an A-plus gets a C because he has to give half of his A-plus to kids that got Ds and Fs.
Exactly. They were at least smart enough to recognize that. But
yeah, so much for hypocrisy.
Right, exactly. But, yeah, I'll tell you what, I'd like to meet this professor. I'm amazed he was actually able to teach that in his class.
Along the same line, did you see the 10-10 English commercial where they have this teacher in their classroom going about reducing your carbon emissions by 10%? And having a show of hands in the classroom, and everybody put their hands up except for these two kids. Well, there's two kids at the end of the class. She pushes a button, and their heads blow off, and the blood goes all over the class.
Yep, talk about it. Forced indoctrination. Yeah, speaking of global warming, apparently they're really, really pushing that crap in school. My daughter told me that they're already doing some big global warming project.
And as usual, there's no proof that global warming's happening. There's no proof that it's man-made, and even if it is happening. And that they're just rushing right out there because it fits their socialist agenda.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And before this, she had said, well, you know, I don't remember what class it was. I think it might be science. Of course it would have to be science class. Yeah, that's a legitimate science, global warming. But anyway, she was complaining that, you know, she wasn't getting it, or she didn't like it, or didn't understand it. And then after she told me, you know, they're doing this global warming project, I'm like, well, Taylor, I forgive you and I understand. Global warming's a bunch of crap anyway. It's a big lie. No wonder you don't understand it.
Well, even the main scientists theorize that, you know, a couple thousand years ago, the carbon gas that was in the atmosphere was way above what it is now. And if you read the good book, there is nothing that us humans can do to this planet that God can't take care of.
Exactly. That's why he told us, you know, to replenish the earth, that Abraham's seed would be as numerous as the stars in the sky and the sands on the beaches.
Well, they don't have that. They don't have that God. They don't have that moral compass. They think that they're humanists. They believe that men are God. We're our own God. We worship ourselves. So we have to do something about it. And the something we usually have to do about it is slit our throats. But they won't slit their own throats.
Oh, yeah, they volunteer everybody else for the front line.
Like your grandma hired 10 teachers, and that's what is his name?
Tom, I hope your recovery's progressed. It's good to see you back here. I'm sorry you were away so long, and and that you suffered such misfortune?
Well, I spent the day in the hospital, but that's beside the point.
Yeah, well, we have to look up and ahead, right? That's important.
Trying to find a doctor now that wants to do an operation for him.
Still haven't found one.
Nope.
Yeah, last I knew, poor Tom had gone to the doctor to schedule a surgery, and the doctor that he scheduled him to see, he looked at him and said, "I'm not doing the surgery."
I didn't do it, so I ain't fixing it, basically.
Wow. That's. Yeah, you know, that's the way it is when people's lives become a business. And that's all the medical profession is a business. And most of it is a Jew business, the worst kind of business you could have. It's all profit-driven and liability-centered. That's it. That's all they care about. It is high profits and no liability.
You know,
Well, Bill, the two signatures that they want from you when you go into the hospital is, number one signature is to bill your insurance, and number two signature is so if your insurance doesn't pay, they bill you. I always put charity care there.
Yeah, well, those of us who can are much better off avoiding doctors and hospitals and all that, and especially pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, I try to show as many people as I can and explain to them, you know, I'm like, hey, are you aware of what the medical symbol is? Can you tell me what the medical symbol is? And I'd say half the people can actually, you know, identify it and say something like, well, yeah, it's some kind of cross and or shield with some kind of snake on it or something like that. I'm like, well, yeah, that snake should tell you something. It's a serpent. There's a reason why that's the symbol for the medical field, because it's a field created by the Jews.
Well, yes, to a great extent, for the most part, the field was created by the Jews. That the you know, we had a tradition of chambermaids and what are they called? I'm sorry, the word's lost on me. The women that would help other women deliver children and men who would tend to farm animals.
Midwives.
Patch people up when their bones are broken and when they're cut and bleeding. And that kind of medicine is a necessity because we have accidents. But yes, midwife. I'm sorry. That just lost me. The midwife profession, that they were, women that were midwives were very often sought to families that had other problems, right? Well, as far as pharmaceuticals are concerned, they're all potions. They're all elixirs. It is sorcery. That's why pharmakia, what was called sorcery by the King James translators. And it's still sorcery. It's still every bit sorcery. Read some of these, the development of the drug and what they expect it to do versus what it does and all of the side effects it has. It's certainly sorcery. That they have no idea what's going on with half of these drugs.
Well, no. When your list of possible side effects are, you know, as long as your arm, and then half of them are worse than the malady that they're supposed to cure, you know something's wrong. How in the heck can they possibly allow this stuff? I mean, we know why, but even people with half a brain in their head should be able to see that and say, I'm not touching that stuff. It can do what to me? No, that's okay. I'll suffer for a little while, you know?
Well, I only skimmed it, so I don't remember. I didn't even skim it. I just glanced at it, so I don't remember it too well. But Balakaius today sent out a bunch of mailings, as usual. But he sent one mailing out that talked about this substance that women were using, and it's basically a glaucoma medication, I think it started out as. And the people that were taking it for glaucoma, the realization came that it made their eyelashes longer and thicker. So now these women are getting this that this stuff applied to their eyelashes in salons, and it's being dispensed without a prescription for this purpose. But what's going on is that it's causing them to grow hair in unexpected places. It's causing them to have a high degree of hairs. Even some people have eyelashes growing into their corneas now. And the skin on their eyelids is turning purple. And I think that anybody so vain that to pay a doctor for some potion in order that they would have thicker eyelashes probably deserves to grow hair in places they don't need it.
Yeah. Well, seriously, it's like Botox. I'm sure most of us here know exactly what Botox is. It's rat poison.
Well, right. And it would be nice poetic justice if everybody that ever got Botox pumped into one of their body parts, that part just blew to like 100 times its normal size. I would just love that. That is.
Well, the whole
with lips the size of Fat Albert's butt cheeks. That would be funny as hell.
Well, we've all, you know, what is it called? The respectability of socialism or society, public opinion, and the status quo of the bourgeois, the uppities, the do-gooders, Christianity, universalism, socialism. I mean, it has a lot of different forms.
Bruce, you sound muffled or something. I can't quite make out.
But the professional only wants us to... Okay, I'll try to look into this problem.
Well, the majority of people in the forum think you sound drunk. Cheryl's a majority.
Have problems going to the bathroom too often? Take our drug. It'll kill your liver and make you diabetic, but hey. You'll love the renal angina.
Well, right. And I'm getting all kinds of emails about the wonders of some of these artificial sweeteners, aspartame or aspartame or however it's called, and all the carcinogens it's causing. We wonder why so there are such high cancer rates today. But people will get off that line at McDonald's or stop buying a Diet Coke. It's crazy. That they want their sin and they want to be healed, that they want another drug to heal them.
It's the defecation of bacteria that are eating E. coli. That's what aspartame is.
Well, the stuff's obviously no good for you, and I wouldn't, I never, I can't honestly say it. I mean, they probably slipped it to me in prison a few times when I didn't know it, right? I wouldn't doubt it. But I can't say I ever ate it. And knew that I was eating it because I've never eaten diet products. I've always refused to eat diet anything.
Right.
Well, some of us have to.
Yeah, it's true, Tom.
Even honey will make your blood sugar go up.
Yeah, you know, when I was out of shape and first started working out, honey actually bailed me out a few times because I had low blood sugar. And honey fixed me right up until I got my butt back into shape.
Yeah, speaking of sweeteners, have you guys noticed the resurgence of sodas with natural sugar in them now? They're calling, you know, like a lot of, like the Sierra Mist, they're calling it, I think, something like Sierra Mist Natural because they're using sugar again.
I've seen it in Snapple, too, and a couple other products. I laughed at with my mother in the supermarket one day that sugar was now being advertised as a diabetic benefit. As a dietetic benefit, I'm sorry.
Well, if you guys remember correctly, the whole push with this high fructose corn syrup, it was supposed to be healthier than sugar because they had been saying sugar was so bad for you. And that's when they switched to this high fructose corn syrup. But the reason why they switched to this high fructose corn syrup is because the government subsidy work with the farmers, they've been pretty much encouraging our farmers to grow corn till it was coming out of their ears, and we've had such a glut and such a surplus the last 15 years or so, 10, 15 years. And now, recently, and of course this isn't in your major media or anything, our corn surplus, our corn supply is gone. And the government has told all the farmers that they are no longer subsidizing corn. This is how we've been, you know, the government has been able to use all this surplus corn for experiments, which of course produced your high fructose corn syrup, has produced your ethanol and various other products. And the reason why high fructose corn syrup was being so used, it is definitely much less healthy than sugar, but it was tons cheaper for the soda companies to purchase. And now, since there is no more of the corn surplus, and the high fructose corn syrup either is, you know, I wouldn't say it's non-existent, but I guarantee you the price of that has now skyrocketed to more natural proportions. Now they're putting sugar back into sodas and claiming it as the, you know, it's, you know, back to the old days and, you know, and back to all natural now. And, you know, it's just, it's such a bunch of BS propaganda. It's ridiculous.
Well, they're trying to enhance us, Matt. Don't you know that mercury's good for you? That's what's in corn syrup.
Right, absolutely. And that's, and I think a lot of us here know that autism is essentially the, all these symptoms of autism are symptoms of mercury poisoning.
Well, I'm happy to see the Pepsi throwback and the Mountain Dew throwback and all that stuff, because sugar is natural and it's much better for you than any of that other crap is.
Well, right, but refined sugar isn't as good for you as raw sugar, that's for sure. And from what I understand, the molasses content, the brown part of real sugar, it is supposed to contain substances that help your body process the sugar so that you don't get it, your pancreas in it into trouble, and you don't get diabetes.
Right, brown sugar.
Right, well, not necessarily brown sugar per se, Tom, but your basic raw sugar, unprocessed.
Well, basically, all my life, but I've shunned high fructose corn syrup, I've shunned corn syrup, I've shunned soybean oil and soy protein products. And just because my personal diet philosophy has always been that if corporate America is pushing it on you, it can't be good.
Right, it can't be good.
No, it's cheap. That's why they push it on you.
Well, of course. I would always compare labels and take the product that didn't have the high fructose corn syrup and the product that didn't have the soy oil.
Maximize profits and be damned with the public.
Right on. But my wife will tell you, I'm a major label reader. When we go shopping, I mean, I'll take forever because I read everything.
Yeah, my mother hates taking me shopping because I'm like, don't buy that. I ain't that. Don't buy that. Don't buy that. That's garbage. Don't buy that. That's kosher.
Uh-huh.
I ain't buying that. I ain't eating it. So my diet doesn't have a whole lot of variety, but that's okay. I prefer it that way.
Yeah, I still try to maintain variety, especially for our kids. But
that is my one weakness, though, is chocolate. I have a real weak point. That's my junk. Chocolate is the sum total of all my junk.
Well, actually, chocolate isn't that bad for you. It definitely has health benefits.
Yeah, I probably do about 4 ounces a day. It's like a crack habit.
Dark chocolate, Matt.
Yeah.
Yeah, I prefer milk chocolate.
Well, the dark chocolate has a health benefit to it. Well, chocolate, period, does, but the dark is better.
How you doing, Avenger?
Hey, you know, I wanted to say about that fructose corn syrup, I'm not sure he's the first one that's brought it out, but Pastor Wickstrom let me know about that about a year ago, and all of a sudden, like Matt said, the shelves are having it on their labels, no fructose corn syrup, so I just wanted to let you know that.
Yeah. Well, people have been complaining about it probably for at least 10 years that I can remember.
Yep.
Nobody said anything to me about it, so I heard it from Wickstrom.
Yeah. Well, it's not usually the Bible teacher's forte, right? I mean, it's not usually his area of things to cover, right?
Well, that's right. But he's a prophet of sorts, and I'm thankful.
Yeah, I've always just tried to stay away from soda, period. I've never really viewed it as a healthy part of my diet anyway. I mean, I'll drink some every now and again, but you'd be hard-pressed to even see me, you know, drink a whole can or a whole bottle of soda at one time. I mean, I'll take a swig of my wife's Sprite every now and again, but, you know, coupled with the fact that, you know, I want to keep all my digits so I don't drink too much of it.
No, most of my diet is on. I drink all black coffee and black tea, nothing in it, and water and fruit juice. That's about all I drink. I drink a lot of fruit juice, apple cider and carrot juice and these juices made from berries.
Yeah, I'm huge on Concord grape juice. Not only do I love it, but it's got so many health benefits.
Antioxidants, right?
Yeah, I definitely enjoy a few glasses of Concord wine too. You get some good Concord grape wine, it tastes almost just like grape juice.
Yeah, you know, I've had 3 glasses of wine, I think, since I got home 20 months ago. Which is a shame because I love wine, but I never want to drink it because I'm on a program just about every night, and I can't, the two don't mix, right?
Right. Well, you know, you... You've already been known to fall asleep in the middle of a show.
Oh, yeah, I fell asleep in the middle of Eli's program last week. I felt terrible about that. That's a first for me. That really is a first for me.
I'm just ribbing you, Bill.
I wanted to listen to it. I only had about 4 hours sleep the night before. The dog woke me up early in the morning. And once I'm up, I stay up. And I felt really bad about that. But it shit happens. That's the way it is.
Right.
At least I didn't fall asleep halfway through my own program. That would be
right.
That would be a lot worse. Well, or with my mic open so that I could start snoring.
Right? I was just about to say that. Snoring.
That would have been pretty funny. Unless you were Eli. I feel real bad I blew the recording that night. That was my fault. My computer was set up wrong. I just screwed it up. That's why you see me recording twice tonight, right? So that doesn't happen again.
Right. Hey, Bruce, do you have Eli scheduled to host Chris DeLeo's show anytime soon?
No, I have Mike Delaney scheduled for that would be the 12th. And after that, it's open. So, if you'd like to ask him, that'd be fine also, of course. And I'd like to come up and host.
Yeah, because it's definitely nice to see Eli on TeamSpeak now.
Yeah, I hope he comes back more often. Well, when is Mike doing on Chris DeLeo's program, Bruce?
Well, on the 12th, but I don't have there's not a subject. It'll probably be on activism.
Yeah, okay.
The 12th.
Well, that's his forte, right?
Yeah.
But he'll have a lot to talk about for sure. I look forward to that. And Victor, you're doing it tomorrow, I think? Oh, that's right. Victor doesn't have his mic on.
Victor's doing something on a presentation on masonry tomorrow on Chris DeLeo's. I have to set his channel up probably tonight.
Yeah, that'll be a good show.
Yeah, I'm sure, because he has personal experience with it, and it's something he's wanted to do. So to get it all on tape, that might be good, to have somebody contemporary talk about masonry and hopefully quell some of the rumors, right?
Right.
There is a lot of misinformation going around about masonry, too, I'm sure.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I used to consider myself knowledgeable. I wouldn't say an expert, but I considered myself knowledgeable at one time. And since coming to CI, I've learned a lot different about certain areas of masonry. Doesn't mean that you know, most of the stuff I had learned was wrong, but there were definitely some things that that I had read or thought I learned I was in error. So yeah, I can't wait.
Well, that should be interesting. Let me open. WCB wants to talk, so I'll open his microphone. How you doing, WCB?
All right, just hanging out in front of my computer. yeah, there's Masonic Lodge. I can walk to from my house, and they just have bake sales there. I don't know of anything weird that goes on there.
As of October 4th, Chris DeGenier is ranked 391,880 on Alexa.com.
Wow, what a jump.
Yeah, that's incredible.
That's great.
Yes, it is.
I wonder if half of those hits would come from the ADL.
Well, that's okay, too, to help with the ADL. The higher I get, the more hits I get, the higher my site returns in the search engine results, right? So the ADL can keep visiting my site, and hell with them.
Absolutely. Well, it means they're getting more and more worried.
They're getting nervous. They know we're waking up.
Absolutely. I mean,
I pray so.
Well, our membership list is over 150 now, although...
Yeah, I talk to people almost, you know, not every day, but at work I talk to a lot of people, and a lot of these people are Christian. They just need a short push to identity because they're already pissed off at the government and, like, immigration.
Well, bring them here. Give them my site links. Give them Clifton site links. Give them Eli site links. Send them to the new Ensign site, anything.
I've given them links to the A3P because I think that's a bit, you know, low key. I won't get in much trouble for that, but I don't know about Chris DeGenia. I'll think about it. I have to get a feel for them.
Well, as soon as they express some sort of racial consciousness, you could go there, right? I wouldn't go there until they express that. I've learned over the years that I had a lot more success talking to people who expressed some sort of racial consciousness. And the ones that don't, I think that's a sign that Yahweh's calling them. And the ones that don't express any sort of racial consciousness are still asleep, and they're going to vehemently resist you.
Well, I'll tell you what, I...
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely Marvin Lynch. Yeah, they should listen to his program first.
Man, don't send any introductee into CI to Lindstedt. He'll just ruin them. He's not the place to start. Yeah, unless you're a white nationalist and you've been on those boards for 5 years, Martin's not the place to start. I don't think I'm the place to start either. So, but Martin's definitely not the place to start.
I'm gonna send them to SF, make them talk to Don Black and David Duke, and also Chimp Out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to admit, I wasn't racially aware before I found the dual seed line message. I consider myself your quintessential universalist when it came to that. You know, I took the whole Jew premise hook, line, and sinker, that, you know, we're all the same and, you know, they're all just a brother from another mother kind of crap. But,
Joe, I just got banned from that stuff. I was being sarcastic.
But, you know, my biggest, what really spoke to me was my quest to find out who the Israelite was.
I've noticed there's a high percentage of neurotic nutjobs on SF, like emotionally damaged people.
I think 3/4 of them are probably genetically damaged people, looking for an identity that they don't have, so they'll split hairs about who's white and who's not.
Well, to me, like the Aryan nation, you know, and the white nationalists, as I understood them, didn't have anything to offer me in terms of legitimacy for their racism.
Well, right. That's absolutely true. And I used to argue all the time with a World Church of the Creator acquaintance that I had in prison, and I cornered him all the time on the race issue. Because he believed in evolution. And if you think that we evolved from lower life forms, well, why not mate with them? And then the offspring will just evolve again.
Right. But yeah, I'll tell you what, as soon as I you know, started reading the first sermons on the dual sea line and learning exactly who the Israelites were, I felt like I got hit by a sledgehammer. It couldn't have been more plain and obvious to me, even not being racially conscious. Although, you know, of course I've always recognized myself as a white person, knowing I was different from everybody else. But man, that the whole Jewish propaganda had absolutely been hammered into my head. I mean, I went to a city school where I was one of three white boys in my entire class. I think if anything, I should have ended up a racist after that. But that just, you know, I have a patient and forgiving nature, and I thought that was the way I had to be. You know, no matter how ridiculous these apes and monkeys acted toward me, which they all hated me. There's no doubt in my mind. They all hated me.
You went to school in Pennsylvania, Matt.
Yep, sure am, Robert.
Sounds just like my experience here in South Carolina.
Yeah, and what's amazing, I mean, I grew up in the country. I lived in the country and went to a city school. I didn't even know what a black kid was until I started going to this Catholic school in third grade or fourth grade.
Yeah, I had the same thing. We lived in the suburbs and they bussed me into the city school in middle school.
Yep, exactly.
The first 2 weeks, dozens of them would get expelled for violence and fighting and drugs and stuff.
Well, since I went to a small Catholic school, we didn't quite have that. But I wasn't even there one day, and I experienced the behavior of the blacks and how it was out of control. I absolutely could not believe how these kids behaved. I mean, there wasn't out and out violence, but there was just complete and total disrespect for the nun teacher, which amazed me even more because this woman was a monster. I mean, her name said it all. Her name was Sister Herman Joseph. She looked like a Herman Joseph. She was about as wide as she was tall, had a mustache and beard, and ham hands, big monstrous hands. And this one black kid so pissed her off one day. I mean, she was trying to tell him something, and he literally put his hands over his ears, closed his eyes, and started going, well, the dumb little nigger should have opened his eyes, because then he would have seen the nun come up with her fist clenched before she punched him in the head. Needless to say, she had about 10 days on the street for that one, but I laughed my ass off.
That's interesting. You said the Catholic school up north is just like the public school in the south, so it makes you think the Catholics are into integration.
Oh, yeah. It amazes me today to realize that, you know, the Catholic Church and these Catholic schools and whatnot should be the first ones to understand the racial message of the Bible.
I've heard they're behind the immigration from the southern border.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Well, yes, they are, because that's what they need to fill their churches back up, the Catholics.
Right.
They need all those Mexicans and all those South Americans that believe in, that love all that idol worship, and they need that to fill their pews. Because white people, most white people are totally disaffected from the Catholic Church and aren't buying the bullshit anymore. So they're just not going to church. And they're like I was 15 years ago. I'd rather be totally agnostic than go to that Catholic Church and listen to that crap, because you knew it was lies.
Well, yeah, that's what absolutely turned me off. You know, I couldn't handle, because, you know, I went to Catholic school the whole way up until I quit 6 weeks before graduation. The complete hypocrisy of all of it, I just could not handle anymore because it permeated my family life. I was watching, you know, I watched the whole hypocrisy as my parents' marriage was dissolving in front of my eyes, you know. 31 years of marriage, down the tubes. And I'm, you know, almost positive a lot of it had to do with the fact that, you know, the religion that was supposed to hold us together was so false and fake that that's what my parents' marriage turned out to be.
Well, I always question and always had a problem with the graven images that I found.
Well, that's exactly true. That's a major reason to question the Catholic Church.
I never felt comfortable with the whole veneration of the cross thing that they would do once a year. Everybody made a procession up to this cross that everybody kissed. The priest is holding this cross out with, you know, with the image of Christ crucified upon it, and everybody came up and kissed the feet. And, you know, the priest is there with this towel and he's wiping it off after everybody kisses it. It made absolutely no sense to me at all.
Well, it's pure idolatry. And people don't know any better. That they're not told any better. They think that's okay, and everybody else does it, and that priest does it, so it must be all right.
That's what it is, though, idolatry.
Yeah, in its purest form, Tom.
Well, I'm trying to upload the it's coming out. It's the site ranking screenshot. It is now uploaded to the Christigenia Main Forum open house, if anybody's interested.
I don't mean to change the subject here, but did a little bit of research myself into the electric being deregulated come this December. And the only part of it that you're actually going to see an increase in is the generation part of your bill. The rest of it should stay the same, from what I understand.
Yeah, the question is, how much of an increase just in that generation part of it? It's going to be at least 30%.
Well, yeah, I'm looking at probably, yeah, at least 66% maybe.
Ouch.
I missed that. What is that for?
The electronic, the deregulation of the electric grid, it's basically just going to affect the generation part of your bill. Obviously, there's all different types, like transmission, line service, that kind of thing. But the only part you should see a raise in is the actual generation part.
Well, that must be affecting only Pennsylvania, or is that nationwide? I don't know. I don't pay attention to the news.
No, I'm pretty sure it's a national deregulation. I think that's a federalized thing, isn't it, Tom?
Yes, the Fed is deregulating themselves of the the electric grid. Now, why don't they do that with a lot of other stuff?
Yeah, well, every time they deregulated one of our one of our key industries, we ended up getting screwed, and foreigners have bought them out at every single time. So why not the electric? It'll be the well, it's already happening to the water. So
right.
If they could regulate, if they could monetize and securitize the air, they would do that too, the Jews.
Well, I'm sure they're not too far behind with that, Bill. That's what the whole carbon tax is all about. They're going to be taxing us for breathing.
Well, right. We'll have to wear meters or something.
Monsanto is breeding seeds that will grow well in aluminum-rich environments, i.e. chemtrails.
Well, isn't that special?
Yeah, I don't have to tell you what aluminum's going to do to you.
Well, my tomatoes 2 years in a row got wiped out because of airborne blight, and I'm starting to really suspect that it's something else and not anything natural.
The barium salt in aluminum. So.
It's covered the whole region up here.
I bet it has.
And they've been doing that. They've been doing that since I was a kid. I mean, I can remember in the car ride to church, looking up in the sky and seeing it look like a checkerboard. And, you know, even then, because I used to point that out to my parents all the time, and the only thing that they could say is, oh, those are, you know, those are the vapor trails from jets. But, you know, I don't understand how they could have just shrugged it off. I mean, it seemed so odd and obscure to me. And at first, I'm the only way I was able to look at it with the knowledge that I had was, wow, they're sectioning off the sky.
Well, I grew up 2 miles from Newark Airport, which is one of the busiest airports in the country, and yeah, you know, 2 miles from Newark Airport and 5 miles from Kennedy Airport, right? Or maybe six. And probably about that same distance from LaGuardia Airport, because I grew up in Jersey City, right? And Bayonne. And you're right smack in between Newark and New York City. That there isn't no part of New York City that's more than 10, 12 miles away. And there's 3 major airports right there. And I never remember seeing in the sky more than one or two vapor trails at any given time, and we would watch them disperse. That they would disperse in a matter of a couple of minutes and be gone. And now these trails that these planes leave behind, they don't disperse for hours, some of them. It takes a long time for them to disperse. There's something there that's different than when I was a kid. Because there was a plane flying overhead every 3-4 minutes when I was a kid, going to one of those 3 airports.
Right. Well, keep in mind.
Go ahead, Tom. They just stay there. Like you said, Bill, they don't go away anymore.
Well,
become clouds.
And if they just stayed there, then when I was a kid and they just stayed there watching the sky on a summer afternoon, you would see 100 chemtrails. Vapor trails. You would see 100. But I never remember seeing more than 2 or 3 at any given time.
Well,
General Hackensack's the same way. It's close to all of those airports. It's close to LaGuardia and Newark. It's only 15 miles away, maybe 18 miles away.
I don't think you see so much of the chemtrails yet in those areas. Because they're actually altitude dependent. Most of your chemtrails occur, I believe, it's like over 15,000 or 20,000 feet. So if you are located close to an airport, most of your, if not all of your plane traffic is below that, because they're either taking off or they're landing.
Well, planes have multiple fuel tanks as well, Matt, so that can get taken into consideration. And one reason that I, besides the weather modification, is you can control the food, now this is kind of out there, by making it grow less because you're reflecting the sunlight back in the outer space.
Well, I know I can't grow a damn tomato. And I must have had 1,000 tomatoes out there that got rot from this blight.
And black and brown stuff. Like my grandma's tomatoes used to get.
That they were all healthy. They were about to turn ripe. They were all big, green, healthy tomatoes. And 3-4 days later, they were gone. That they were all rotten right on the vine. I harvested maybe 5% of my tomato potential this year. Not even. And they were off vines that were up against the garage wall that stayed healthy.
It would be interesting to see what would happen if you would put some clear plastic over top of your tomatoes next year.
Next year, I intend to do something. I don't know what it is yet, but I'm going to do something and plant a small number of tomatoes in some sort of shelter. I'm going to get some kind of plastic dome or plastic tent house or something and grow a few. Maybe I'll plant 4 or 6 plants as an experiment.
You could get some of that good, heavy, clear plastic and make yourself a frame out of some cast iron pipe, you know?
Yeah, well, that's my thought. I got a couple of tents here that we haven't used in years. And if I put the tent poles together and make some clear plastic covering for it, that might work, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, if we're still living here at this house next year, I've already told my wife, and you know, I want to turn the backyard into a garden.
Yeah, well, we grew a lot of squashes this year, and I didn't plant a whole big variety. We grew some beans and some beets, but we didn't grow enough to do any canning. I had really set my hopes on canning a lot of tomatoes, but they got blight again.
Don't throw the beet greens away. They're good. I like them with butter. They taste like spinach.
So, sorry, they're gone. I don't eat the beet greens. I should try them one day, though. I've never, I didn't grow up in a rural culture where you would try things like that. I'm a city boy. I never even saw them sell beet greens in a store. I've seen all kinds of greens, and usually only the Negroes bought them. I worked in a supermarket in the city for a year when I was a kid. Mustard greens and collard greens and all that. But white people didn't buy that stuff. Only the Negroes bought them. So I always never paid too much attention to greens, figuring it was all Negro food, right? That's the way I was raised. I made a fish dinner for my family once. They came to my house. I must have been about 26, 27 years old. And it was catfish. Yeah, you know, and it was kind of a yuppie thing in the mid-80s, catfish. And mid-90s. So I made a catfish dinner for my folks and my grandparents, and my grandmother pulled me on the side, and she said, "William, what are you serving?" And I'm like, what do you mean, Grandma? And she's like, "We don't eat those things." And I'm like, what do you mean? It's catfish. And she said, "Black people eat catfish. We don't eat those things." I swear.
Good for her.
Yeah, good for her. She didn't know why she was telling me that, but she knew it was true.
Well, catfish are bobby feeders, and they don't taste very good. Plus, they're very balmy.
Well, right, and I know those things now, but I didn't know when I was 28. And my grandmother, she's a swine eater, so she's not that smart. She grew up on farms in Massachusetts. That's her background. She's upstairs right now. 92 years old.
Yeah, both of my grandmothers lived that long.
But she sure as hell wasn't wild about catfish, that's for sure. We don't eat those things. No, son of the miss, we don't eat crawdads in Yankee land.
Well, I sure used to.
No, I never ate a crawfish in my life. In fact, I would call them a crayfish. I would call them crayfish anyway.
Yes, crayfish, or like Gerald calls them, mud bugs.
Yeah, it tastes kind of like lobster.
Yeah.
Well, we have crayfish here. I mean, I didn't even know we had them here until my grandchildren came this July, and we went down to the creek and we found some crayfish. I got a picture on WilliamFink.net somewhere of a crayfish in a jar that my grandson caught. But we actually convinced him to let it go before it croaked.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite pastimes as a kid. I mean, that was one of the first things I remember doing on the river.
I never knew we had them this far north. I really never did. And they were some big suckers, like maybe 6-8 inches long.
Oh, yeah. Well, they have a lot of people around here have various tribe methods for catching mass amounts of crayfish. It's actually pretty easy. It's just all you need is a fairly decent sized net, maybe only, I don't know, 2 feet by 2 feet or 3 feet by 3 feet of a fine net. You put a piece of bread right in the middle of it, put a rock on it, drop it in the water, pull it out in about a half an hour, and you probably have about 40 of them.
Matt, they raise them on farms.
Yeah, I'm sure they do if they can sell them for food.
They have a crayfish festival here in Columbia, South Carolina.
So that was one of the things, like, when I was young, I used to hike the Appalachian Trail with my older brother. I mean, this, you know, not that I'm that old, I'm almost 40, but, you know, back in the day, we could, you know, my parents would hook us up with backpacks, canteens, and a mess kit, and no food and let me and my brother hike the Appalachian Trail all weekend. We would go to the creeks that we knew and catch crayfish out of the creeks and eat them. And that's what we subsisted on the whole weekend.
No, thank you. Not that hungry.
Well, we got to have better things to talk about than catfish and crawfish and all these southern Negro delicacies, right?
I think
well, needless to say, I don't eat them anymore.
Thankfully.
The roaches that they are.
Right.
Son of the Mist, that's an interesting avatar you got there. Which one is you? No, I'm kidding. I had to do that. So what else do we got going on? Well, this is an open forum, people. Let's go. Somebody has to have some ideas for something to talk about, because I don't. I ran my mouth all week. Well, what about the Jude program the other night? Was that all right? How about Ezekiel 34, 35, and 36?
I tried to download that Jude talk, and it would not work. I don't know if there's anybody else
again.
A problem with that.
That's because you should be downloading.
Yeah, that's where I was attempting to. I was attempting to Chris again, Bill. I'll try it again.
Bad links on my site. Thank you, Stephen. My site went through a lot of changes when I switched it over to the server, and I'll fix them up tonight. Could sit and not work for a year, and nobody would tell me about it, I swear.
One thing that you should be aware of is Senate Bill 510, which will virtually put the family farm out of business, as well as regulations for other people who grow food in their backyard and take it to the farmer's market.
They're going to try to close down all the farmers' markets, too, this S-510. Yeah, that's right. This Senate bill passes, these bastards.
They got us any way they want us, Bill.
Well, you know, as soon as that passes, the illegalization of vitamin supplements and herbal supplements is next.
It's all Agenda 21, Matt.
Yeah, I can't wait to become a criminal because they catch me with a bag of vitamins.
How about a bag of fresh ground ginger or something, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, I just picked this basil.
Or charging you for growing tomatoes in your backyard, Bill.
Yeah, it's a sick world, these Jew bastards. They're trying to pollute and pervert absolutely everything. And I don't know when the hell people are going to wake up. There's got to be something that makes them start to make those dry bones start to come alive.
Well, when it actually costs too much to buy a cheeseburger from McDonald's.
You know they
have the outlaw burger part.
Right. Well, they're turning them into soy burgers anyway, to a point where people aren't even going to notice the difference.
Speaking of burgers, you hear a farmer burger, right? They're going to put statins in the burger to help you.
Statins? I'm not familiar with that term, Tom.
Statins, yeah, they help your heart, you know, but they kill your liver.
Cholesterol. They won't put in the water supply.
Well, they won't have. I mean, yeah, fluoride is rat poison. I mean, they put it in rat poison.
No, the statin. They want to put them in the water supply, too.
Well, they also want to put lithium in the water.
Yeah.
Well, the fluoride that they are putting in the water, a lot of the fluoride's actually coming from China. And there's been enough.
There's all kinds of impurities in it. There's all kinds of lead and all kinds of stuff in it.
Yep.
Well, why would we put anything from these Chinese bastards into our bodies? That they poisoned our food, they poisoned our pet food, they poisoned our children's toys. I wouldn't trust them for anything.
Yeah, they poisoned our toothpaste. That was a big one.
If you would read my water bill, Matt, the last time we had a report, it says that fluoride is something that helps your teeth. And it has long been known that the ADA has pulled away from that, or whatever that
Well, it's part of a bigger agenda, and they're not going to change it. That they want a retarded population so that the criminals can continue to run the hen house.
They want to hire only people at an IQ of 80 for the police force.
Yeah, well, they have to keep lowering those standards because that they have to keep their affirmative action society operating. If people were only hired for jobs that were qualified to perform those jobs, well, we wouldn't have a Negro with a job.
You know, there's already a glut with people who can't find the job that have college educations. So getting a college education doesn't guarantee you anything.
Nope.
Well, getting a college education, as far as I'm concerned, practically guarantees that you stay stupid.
Yeah, quite honestly, I'm glad I never went to college. You know, there was a lot of times where I thought I really missed out because I didn't go to college. But I really think there was a huge reason why I didn't. I think that they may have actually finished my indoctrination.
I worked with a guy that had an MBA that was also a retired Army major. And he used to like to say that people go to college to get stupid and wear a necktie to stay that way. That was one of his favorite sayings.
Well, speaking of the Army, you know, they're using DU, and it's one of those things where you cannot let that genie out of the bottle. Once it's let out of the bottle, you can't contain this stuff. Causing all kinds of deformities, etc., over there where we're shooting this stuff off at. You know what I'm talking about. And they're not letting anybody know, not even the troops, what they're doing to them.
Right. Now, Bob's saying he's glad he went to college, but he went for a hard science. He didn't go for a liberal arts major, and that's it's the liberal arts fields and theology and education. And all of those fields that the Jews have absolutely destroyed. That they can't do too much to destroy engineering because, the bridge is going to stay up or it's not. The building's going to fall or it's not. Some buildings get help, Joe, like the World Trade Center.
Nanothermite, right.
But no, the hard sciences are the hard sciences. That there's a correct and an incorrect technique, and there's a right or a wrong answer, right?
It just amazes me what happened to all the people that had to set those explosives in those buildings, and you don't know anything about them. There's got to be hundreds of these people.
Well, there were Mike Delaney's shown all the evidence that shows that these Jews, these Jewish moving companies were active in the World Trade Center and had access to it for many months before the event.
Well, not only that, the security company in charge was headed by none other than George Bush's brother.
Yeah, Mike's got it documented and everything, Tom. You should check out that 9/11 Missing Links movie.
Yeah, it's on ProThink.com, Tom.
I just remember the day it happened and looking at those buildings and my buddy's going, people fall over. I was like, no, they're engineered to withstand that. And they fell over, and I was like, they blew them some bitches up.
They absolutely blew them up, there's no doubt.
Because if it was going to be a failure, Bill, with a plane flying into a building, it wouldn't have come straight down. It would have fell over.
Well, when you take a chainsaw and you go about 80% of the way up a tree trunk and you make a cut straight across, what happens? Don't tell me that the tree trunk disintegrates. Because it can't any longer hold up the other 20% of the tree. What happens is that the 20% falls off, right? That's what has to happen. And you're right. It can't it doesn't compromise the bottom half of the building that's held up all that weight for all that time. But they fell, they imploded straight in. It was without doubt. And anybody who doubts that was a controlled demolition is just an idiot. That there are still people that do.
There's only three buildings in modern history to actually crumble and fall from a fire. And it was all the buildings of the World Trade Center. There's documented evidence of numerous other skyscrapers that burned two times, three times, 10 times as long. One skyscraper in Brazil, I believe, burned for well over 24 hours. The entire structure was gutted, but the metal frame remained intact. Nothing collapsed.
And there was never an investigation. There's got to be an investigation.
Well, I think there is.
Oh, come on. The government produced a 2,000-page report exonerating anyone from any fault.
Well, the only problem with 9/11 is that it happened about 5 years too late for me. If I was out on bail and I'd have taken my briefcase, I'd have gone over to the city and thrown it on the rubble and went to Florida. Thrown it on the rubble right next to that Muhammad Atmer or whatever his name is, right next to his pilot's license, right?
Right. Yeah, I find, you know, that's another one of the absolutely ludicrous facts that, you know, that they tried to say that, this fire can actually bring down two skyscrapers in another building, but yet can't burn up an ID.
Well, yeah, right. So you take that same tree and you you cut it about 80% of the way up the trunk. You made you make a slice with a chainsaw right through it, and then you set the top half on fire, and the trunk's still not going to disintegrate, right?
Nope.
And anybody believes that fire in that plane brought that whole structure down is just has the mind of a child.
Well, it proves that fluoride works.
Yeah, fluoride works.
Yeah, fluoride works. And Building 7 never got hit by anything. And that was a big building, too. I mean, I've stood in that plaza 100 times.
47
Those buildings were huge.
It was 47 stories, and I still don't know what building you're talking about when you say Building 7.
Okay, Joe Pa. What damage? A couple broken windows?
That's about all it could have is a couple of broken windows, if it had that.
Right, it had major damage, Joe, after they blew it.
After it fell down? Joe, you're out of your mind if you believe those buildings fell on their own volition.
Yeah, my wife will even tell you, as you know, us, like, you know, many other Americans, watching the whole thing on TV, and as that thing collapsed, I looked right at her dead in the eye, and I said, they just demoed that. That's exactly what it looked like. That they just demoed it.
Hey, why don't you rent a pickup truck and buy a pig and chain it to the back of the pickup truck and drive it all around Lower Manhattan a few times until all the Muslims see you.
Well, you know, Oklahoma City was another one of those.
Just drag that pig on a chain. I mean, it's your pickup truck and your pig. You're not really doing anything wrong. And just drag it on a chain all around Lower Manhattan. The Jews and the Muslims would have to leave, right?
Yeah, they would.
I don't know why all these people complaining about this mosque. Why don't they just drop off a dead pig on the property of the mosque and take pictures of it and post them on Facebook or something?
That would end all these arguments. Now that, they can't see a nude woman or a naked woman or a woman in a bathing suit that's against the...
Yeah, but they have sleeping little boys and goats, and that's not a problem.
Right, exactly. I was just about to say that.
That's it, Jack Daniels. That's what you need. Muslims don't believe in drinking.
No, but they'll smoke cat all day.
Yeah.
Muslims drink, too, and they smoke crack. I know. I have firsthand experience. I've seen it myself. They're huge hypocrites. They're as hypocritical. They're every bit as hypocrititical as the Jews are.
Been watching a lot of YouTube, go and just get your input into this. What do you think of the Germans coming up with UFOs or spacecraft which are anti-gravity?
Yeah, well, I'd like to see the documentary evidence. I don't have a thought on it until I see that.
Yeah, there does seem to be quite a bit of evidence, Bill, of anti-gravity technology.
Well, he's talking about the Germans in the 40s, right? I would like to see it. I'd like to see the documentary evidence. Otherwise, I don't have a thought on it.
Don't you find it kind of ironic that in the 50s we had a onslaught of UFO sightings shortly after the Second World War when we absorbed most of the German scientists?
When was Roswell? Wasn't that 52?
Well, we had a lot of UFO sightings that go back into the 1800s. So don't forget about those.
Well, most of those characters that promote UFOs and aliens and mysterious hocus pocus flying serpents and all that most of them are got their lips around the ass of the Jew, and I don't listen to them. And neither should we. What the most mysterious thing in life is our everyday life and living, and what this strange thing called love and death, and that's what the Jew doesn't want us to.
Well, keep in mind, Bruce, there's a the discussion of the heavens. There are many different heavens. Not to mention, I think it might have even been Eighth Day Woman who a little while ago had posted some really good links to a lot of old art, old Christian art that included UFOs in the background.
Well, that's true.
And quite a few instances within the Bible and things that are described can be easily, explained as spacecraft.
Well, my feeling about aliens or interdimensional beings or whatever you want to call them is, if we're the only chosen people of Yahweh, then these are definitely demons.
Well, right, I would agree with that.
Yeah, Tom, we've definitely discussed this.
And most, let me tell you something. If you examine most of the supposed UFO abductions and people that claim to have contact with aliens, on every single occasion, it boils down to a spreading of universalistic doctrine in the name of higher intelligences, and it's demonic in nature, and right, so it's not biblical, and they are liars. That they're liars or they're demons, one or the other.
Yep.
Yeah, right. Well, Israel DNA, you have a point there also. I'm not going to deny it, but since I don't know, but to either way, to me, it's wrong, and it's evil, and if that no outside influence is going to pull me off the message of Scripture, period. No matter how real and otherworldly it seems. If it isn't the Scripture, it's not right.
Right. Such things as UFOs and whatnot are definitely secondary and tertiary to the truth of Scripture. You know, we can speculate all day as to whether certain verses are actually describing a spaceship, a UFO, however you want to call them. But that it doesn't.
Right. But my point is that they could land right in front of me and tell me to love niggers. I'm going to tell them to go to hell. That's my point.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Nice guy. I would encourage you, Matt, to look into a guy called William Cooper. He wrote a book, I believe it's called The Pale Horse.
Yeah, I think there's a few people who are familiar with that book here.
I've used the book, but I never read it, and I was quite skeptical about parts of it. All I'll say is I got a little brother that spent an awful lot of time on big ships out in the middle of the water, and I've asked him a few questions, and he got nervous, and he said he talked to me after he got out of the Navy. So I'm looking forward to that conversation because he's only got about a year and a half left.
Yeah, so there's certainly something going on. That's pretty much how I look at it. You know, there's something going on, but I'm not going to you know, I'm not going to over-speculate. I'm not going to waste too much time trying to come up with what I would think would be the truth.
Well, right, and that's because nothing's going to pull me from Scripture. So that's the perfect attitude, and the knowledge of what I believe is Yahweh's plan, and even though we don't have the time scale we would like to have, we know that the day is close.
Right. Yeah, and just like Bob in California said, there's lots of technology that's out there that is not available to the public. And not only is it not available to the public, the knowledge of such is not even available to the public.
Well, right, and it just might be a massive government psyop that didn't start out to be a psyop. In other words, if the government is behind it, I don't believe that they're behind it for the purpose of having a psyop. I believe that they're using it, that they would be using the psyop to their advantage, that they would be using the sightings to their advantage in order to cover for their having the technology. You see what I mean? So they have this technology, and people say they saw UFOs, and the government attempts to cover up UFO sightings because they know that that'll create a shield for their and a veil for their technology. That in itself, right? So they're taking advantage of the situation and getting a double advantage out of it. That's the way I would look at that. That they didn't start out to have a psyop. They started out by getting spotted, so they created the scenario where it turned into a psyop by spreading the rumors about UFOs instead of new government technology. And that's a very plausible situation. That's a very plausible scenario.
It's control on every level. If you think the CD has come up and appeared in 1980, you better think again. I think that technology was around for a long time before then.
Well, it's all part of their natural progression of being able to create data from a series of dots that are either on or off.
Binary code, right?
Yeah, Bruce, that's a better picture. Your other avatar is just a little too esoteric-looking. Esoteric-looking. Can I use esoteric as an adjective? I guess I can. In that context. Hello, Bob.
Why, hello. I thought I'd get on here with the UFO stuff.
that might be interesting. What's your perspective?
Well, I mean, if you look at... let's take something that's well known at this point, and that is that jet aircraft. They were, during the 40s and 50s, basically jet aircraft was considered something that was impossible. Yet it was possible because it was being done at that same time. To me, what's going on with UFO stuff is exactly the same stuff now. There are aircraft out there that are available that are using significantly higher technology than we see for commercial aircraft. So they're dubbed as, quote, UFOs.
Well, right, and that's what I was trying to say, was the government was taking advantage of certain sightings and creating the UFO fear, and it in turn conceals their having the technology.
There's a double play on this, too, and that is that it's very convenient because the Jews can also use this to act like they're making some kind of special deals with these crazy aliens, and they're going to save us all. Or they're so powerful we can't deal with them. You know, there's all kinds of wonderful stories you'd come up when you have the aliens. Plus, you can do your perversion, which was talked about in Kathy O'Brien's book, Transformation of America, where part of the UFO stuff was a way of programming people that they were molesting. they're getting molested by, quote, the aliens.
Yeah.
Had
things inserted into his anus by aliens.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of the alien stories, and that's what they talk about getting molested, right?
Think about that. That's just sick. Yeah, you know, these people travel billions of miles from another planet and another part of the universe to come stick something up Whitley Strieber's ass. I just
well,
never...
That's, That's the thing that cracked me up one night was there was Streeper was on there, and there was and I can't remember if it was Hufschmidt and Streeper were on at the same time. And the comment was, you have to be kidding me. This was Streeper was supposedly picked up by an alien.
Yeah, I know. I read
and
his
he goes,
book.
He says, you have to be kidding me. He says, these aliens came 10 billion light years to have sex with you?
Right.
Are you lying that you think I want to believe that?
And pick you out of all the men on the planet.
Yeah.
They can have Tom Cruise and they pick you. They can have whatever. Pick your football idol or whatever, and they pick Whitley Strieber, you know?
Yeah. Well, let's... Yeah, take, for instance, a Sandbagger born in India that has all these gods, 10,000 of them? And one of them might be an elephant or, you know, a cross hybrid, whatever these, whatever they imagine. And they have a dream and they envision this god or this, image or form according to what they've been programmed, right? And it's the same stuff with the alien stuff. If you propagate BS based upon someone's so-called experience.
What was the same thing when the Spaniards came across the sea and landed in on the Yucatan Peninsula, right?
Well, the way I look at it is, we have MRIs now. Why do they need to stick anything up your ass?
Yeah.
Well, the Jews always need to stick something up someone's ass.
Right. Whitley Strieber. So Whitley Strieber was in. He was really abducted by three rabbis, right?
Yeah, that's my opinion of what's going on. I mean, when you're messing with people, you throw some drugs in at them. And dress up like an alien. But if you're a Jew, you don't need to dress up like an alien because you look like a freaking alien.
But did they really think the guy was going to write a book and make $1 million on it after they molested him?
He didn't know. I don't know about that.
But doesn't it make rational, sane, good scriptural, not only scriptural, but this good sense to understand the nature or the contradiction of the thing that is hypnotized with all this BS, which is the self.
Well, I think people want to believe in extraordinary type things going on.
And yeah, they always do. It's all down through history.
But why?
It's all that extraordinary. So I guess
the question is why? Why? To escape from the meaninglessness of our boredom lot? Well,
it's part of human nature, Bruce.
Why asking the euphemism of a sheep?
Bruce, I think you're breaking up real bad, and you're not really getting the feedback.
But in understanding the ways of the world and ways of our own
talking, but he's not
stupidity and our ignorance.
No, he's gonna have to go to.
If we take the time and just a little patience, we can really. Who's going to Hades?
We're at the same to Hades.
Bruce, your connection is real bad, and you're breaking up, and you're not responding to things that are being said to you. So obviously, you're not hearing them. And I think you should probably try reconnecting or something. I don't know.
Hey Bob, have you heard about the this new, what is it? Some kind of UFO. Cabinet or something that they just installed at the UN. I don't know if it actually existed there, but they now made some kind of a public announcement here lately that they have some obscure scientist from I'm not sure whether it's like South Asia or something like that, as the liaison for first contact for UFOs. The UN essentially now has some small division, UFO division now. They made that public.
Yeah, it's a woman, Matt. I forget her name, but she's from South America, I think.
Well, see, that's what they have to do, right?
Now they can make a huge jobs program for every sort of mongrel and Jew in the world by appointing them ambassadorships and emissaries to these aliens, right?
This goes right along with the report from Iron Mountain. This complete, utter nonsense that's created in order to just make jobs for nothing.
Right.
We have a new one now at... A new implementation of how to. You'll love this one. This goes along with the government because part of what I do, I teach for Navy school here. So we used to have a purchase rec form. If you wanted to purchase something, you filled out basically an Excel spreadsheet and gave it to a purchaser. Well, evidently now that wasn't good enough. So now we have school that you have to go to, learn how to do new purchase order, which requires all kinds of computer access to do the purchase order rather than a single Excel spreadsheet. And this is supposed to be the improved system. That, to me, is the UFO ambassador. Since there is no UFO ambassador, I mean, since there isn't any UFOs, we have to create a job, nothing.
Bob, since you're in the military, I was wondering, have you heard of the Manifest Green Flag, I believe it's called?
The Manifest what now?
It's the Manifest Green Flag. It's flying over the memorial in California.
No, I don't know. I don't know anything about
it. Well, I've heard since 2003 until present, we no longer have 50 stars on our flag. We have 59 stars on our flag.
Yeah, I don't know. It's probably some more stuff that the Jews are putting out. I mean,
yeah, probably some more propaganda. They
like
put on a lot
Obama's
of propaganda to lead people down false trails.
Yeah, every single day it's another rabbit hole.
Yeah, kind of like Obama's 57 states that he visited.
Yeah, right.
Well,
so
he probably did.
After all. So it wasn't a mistake after all?
No, I doubt if it was a mistake. Probably is with anything you want to.
Well,
yeah,
I'd
rather not pay attention to him and chase garbage down those rabbit holes, right?
Right. But isn't there like 57 Arab or Muslim states or something like that?
Well, what's that 57 Heinz or what is that stuff now? 57 flavors?
Oh, 57 varieties.
Yeah, that would make more sense.
Uh-huh.
Well, included was Israel, Guam, other American holdings like Samoa, also, Iraq and Iran is also a star in our flag.
Well, I think that's just that's just some bullshit. That's what I think. I think that there's a lot of false information put out so that people waste
what
their time.
What does worship in Iraq do for anybody?
So that people waste their time chasing it and investigating it, and that it leads to a bunch of... dead ends or a bunch more false information and people spend their time debating it. And that way that they keep us all distracted.
You could be right, though.
I could tell you, I had people in the Patriot Movement send me stuff for 10, 12 years in prison. And 99% of it was just straight bullshit. And I got it all, too. I don't throw nothing out. And someday when I get the chance, and I will sooner or later, go through those documents and throw some shit up in some people's faces. Hey, remember when you believed this? And remember when you were chasing that around? And I wish I had the resources to do it now, but because I chase half the damn people in identity out of it.
Yeah, there's so much crud out there. It's unbelievable. But to me, it's all the same thing. It's the Jew trying to distract the white race into all these different pens, and I'll be damned if they don't. If they just keep trying, they got like thousands of these different pens to get into. it's either the Republican pen or the Democrat pen or the independent pen or the UFO pen or the global warming pen or the,
well right, you name but it. I've seen several pens over the years that
and these are just these are just offshoots of that
Bruce
of that the what do you call it? It's if I'm conditioned to believe a lie, and I'm deceived, and I'm self-deceived, I'm deceived by the Jew, isn't it important to understand myself totally and completely and see if that can end? And not that it's not an escape from looking at the fact of our daily, you know, what we are, and seeing if it's not at all possible to go beyond that, not in the sense of,
well, whoever kicked Bruce, thank you. yeah, Bruce is getting old. I love the guy, but he's getting old real quick. Well, anyway, I started to say, talking about these rabbit holes and all these. The next calamity people love to subscribe to and the next big event being trumpeted that never materializes. And I have plenty of documentation, and Avenger called him a prophet before, but I remember Jim Wickstrom back in 1999 was pushing that Y2K thing to the hilt, and it never happened.
And, well, you know who else was doing
that too? He forgot about it real quick the day after January 1st, 2000. When you know, nothing happened.
Who else was doing that too? Was Alex Jones and Chuck Missler? Those guys were pushing that thing. Like Alex Jones was actually he should have been arrested. He was claiming that the Chinese were invading the U.S. across the border in Mexico. The guy was freaking nuts.
People follow these clowns, and then they don't hold them accountable for their bullshit. Nobody should be listening to them.
Well, he lost me on that one because that was absolutely ridiculous. Then he gets
Gary
on the
North's
air the next.
Gary North's another one, right, Poppy Cat? Gary North's another one that's totally full of
There's
crap.
There's another one, and he claims to be a Christian. He's a criminal.
Of course he is, but he's making a lot of money being a criminal. A Christian. Well, I'm just making a joke.
Yeah, I have to admit, I didn't, like, completely fall for the Y2K scare, but I took it in stride, much like everything else that's, you know, where all these alarms are being raised. It's like, well, just prepare, you know? If this is being thrown out there like it is, there's no harm in being prepared, but don't throw all your eggs in one basket over that.
Well, I got letters, and I got newsletters, and I got personal letters, and I got them from about 10, 12 different people, all supposedly identity pastors and this and that, and or identity teachers, or people that are insiders that are in the know, and the economy's crashing in October 99, and it doesn't happen. And Y2K's coming and we're all going to die, and it doesn't happen. And the economy's crashing in September 2001, and nothing happens. Look at the bullshit this summer with the oil spill, the Gulf oil spill. The world should be over by now, according to half these clowns. And people don't hold them accountable. Nobody holds them accountable. Hey, aren't you the asshole that sent me that email 6 months ago, told me the Earth was going to be over, that you knew that the whole Gulf Stream was going to stop and Europe was going to be in a deep freeze by now? What happened?
They're still putting that out, though. I thought that whole thing had a high probability of being a fake in order to extract something from somebody or make money.
Well, right. I see the emails now, and I just delete them because I'm sick of seeing them. But I wouldn't be dealing with any of these people. I don't want to talk to them. I'm not going to listen to them. I'm sure as hell not going to support them. People, they make good, comfortable livings predicting doom every 6, 12, 18 months. And
you know who's another one now? There's some financial guy, some Italian financial guy, short guy, Serrero or something.
Yeah, and I'm
Solente. Gerald Solente.
Yeah,
what
right.
another piece of garbage. Where the hell did he come from? He popped up all of a sudden one day, and he's been predicting the end of the world now.
He's an Alex Jones.
Probably Alex Jones' financial advisor.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a consistent guest on Alex Jones.
Consistently wrong, too. Although he claims to be 100% right. You know, I'm going to start claiming to be 100% right about everything.
No, well, it's easy to be 100% right as long as you keep forgetting what you said last week.
Well, that's what astonishes me about this big thing pushing the news media right now, and I'm kind of wondering whether it's going to, how we're ever going to know whether it plays out or not, because you don't even know whether the votes are counted. But the issue is, don't people remember what happened when the Republicans were in office? So what if all the Republicans are voted back into office again? Who gives
right.
a rat's
well,
ass?
Right. We're just going to have more neocon pro-Israel garbage.
You've got a whole bunch of garbage going back. I mean, it's one set of garbage pails for another set of garbage. What do you want, rotten fish or rotten meat?
It's exactly a revolving both. Door. The Democrats get voted in. The Republicans go sit in the think tanks.
Well, what
4 years later, the Republicans get voted in. The Democrats go sit in the think tanks.
Yep.
They hire each other and give each other bureaucratic jobs. They're never off the public dole, ever. The think tanks get grants from the government to operate.
Well, I'm starting my own think tank.
Yeah, we need permission to get a think tank and some grants from the government.
I'm going to start my own bank.
Then we'd be just like them, right? I'd rather jump off the roof.
I'm going to start my own bank, print my own money.
Hey, did you ever hear of Ithaca dollars?
Oh, man.
There's a town in New York, Ithaca, that printed their own money and actually did it for a while. They had their own self-sustaining currency and economy. And this was back in the 90s.
Yeah, there's some communities that do that.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, nothing illegal about that.
Right.
Well there'd be nothing illegal about it anyhow, but I mean there could be a law that somebody makes that claims it's illegal.
Yeah, and I haven't heard anything about it now in almost 15 years. But that was a big model for the Patriot movement in the mid 90s.
There's nothing to say that you can't start a community to do that. It's just that you have to have a bunch of honest people out there, and I haven't met too many damned honest people with money, so I'm not sure whether those people have to exorcise the Jew from within them. They're more interested in getting other people's money than earning the money themselves, too. That's another thing.
Now, if you told them that, they would swear you said exorcise the Jew within them. So they want more money.
Yes. I got that from Quest. I can't take credit for that one, because I thought that was a funny saying anyhow.
Well, it is, but it can be easily misconstrued, right?
It sure can, especially with my pronunciation, right?
All right, let's take a vote. Should I turn Bruce's microphone back on? Is he going to start talking all over us again and not listening? And
I'm sorry, Bruce, but
you have to, if your speaker's not working, you shouldn't be talking. I'm sorry, but that's the way it is.
You know, you're getting kinder now. I think you are getting in touch with yourself, Bill. Normally, you'd just wailed on him and just said, "Hell with you. You're growing."
That's right. If his arms were long enough, he could scratch his knees.
Yeah, he's really progressing.
All right. I'll just have to go back to my old prison cell.
It's making you soft being out here in the
among the fleshy masses.
Yeah.
Hey, Muniker, I wanted to let you know I've finally really gotten the chance to get into the Mein Kampf site, and I think you're doing a fabulous job with that.
Oh, the part I'm working with is the image gallery.
Right.
And a lot of Bill's been putting up videos. Some of them I send him, a lot of them he just finds. Or perhaps other people send them these videos.
So, Sword Brethren is my second source for good Mein Kampf site videos.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
I think Sword Brethren's biggest contribution for me so far has been Whitey on the Moon.
Whitey on the Moon, here we go.
every time I listen to that, it just cracks me up.
Well, you should send it to Tom and his whole family. Send them CDs. DVDs, the hell with the CD.
You know, I should send it to my own family, too. They think I'm they literally think I'm going to hell and I'm the devil.
Well, if you send it to them,
that's how far it's gotten. Because I'm a
hater. That nigger on my site, All the Whitey Should Die, and there's about three or four of those videos on my site, and Whitey on the Moon, and put together a compendium, right, and send it out to them all.
Yeah.
Proving once again that if you dance in the street, you're going to get hit by an ice cream truck.
That's a pretty good one, too. I think I got that on one of my sites somewhere, too. That's pretty good.
Oh, funny. Yeah, I forgot.
That's my favorite video, probably, this year.
That's a classic.
Watching that nigger get hit by the ice cream truck.
Oh, yeah, that was hours of laughter.
Now, when you send them this DVD, what you got to do is mislabel the file that's in there, the video title. Have it something like Butterflies in June or something.
No, how about like Debbie Does Dallas? Then they're guaranteed to watch it.
Right. There you go.
And you tell them the best part is right at the end.
Yeah.
They got to wait through all this stuff.
Yeah, tell them some trailers first. There's a few trailers first, about 20 minutes, right?
Regular old motion picture.
Yeah, something's got to wake people up. I don't know what it is. It's Yahweh, that's it, and we're on his time schedule.
That's the problem.
How you doing, Unicorn? I ain't seen you in 2 weeks. I know I've been a bomb. I don't call. I don't answer your emails. I just don't have any time.
Well, that's all right. I've been working pretty hard on looking through what I have for that Rainbow 5, you know, the war plan that Roosevelt had for invading Germany by July 1943. And I've been looking through a lot of stuff, and I've got it about finished, and I'm going to send it to you in FileZilla, and then you can kind of look through and pick out things. I found out that the Germans, well, first, Roosevelt had a lot of, actually, I think the War Department, they call it in those days, had a lot of plans for invading or declaring war on different countries, and there's a whole list of them in there. Germany was black, and they had the color code black, rainbow black, and different other countries in the Caribbean were named in there. And they had this color code. Well, they found out that the Germans had the same thing. They had different kinds of white was invading Britain. Yellow was, I call it Case Yellow or Operation Yellow.
Now who's saying the Germans had these? So are these historical documents actually located?
Yeah, this is David Irving. I'm looking through some of his books. David Irving has it, and he gives some sources as he goes along, and usually puts it at the end. But I'd have to go there and find it, but I don't have that ability. But he has a whole list of them that I have to confirm by looking up in different other sources I have here. And then I went through Goebbels' diaries. I don't have all of them, but I got a lot of them. And some things about what he wrote about the provocations to war just before the war. And so I found a lot of that, and I'll be sending it to you pretty soon. When will you have this Hitler's declaration of war with Sword Brethren? Do you have a fixed date for that yet?
Oh, no, that's probably 2 months out. We have a lot of stuff to cover between now and then.
Okay. So I got a while to go anyway.
Well, I want to go back to this Wilhelm Marss. Done with Nesta Webster, we got to cover this Wilhelm Marss because this guy was a prophet, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not sure. You know, he
is Bill talking? Because I can't hear him.
What's that, Bruce?
Is Bill talking or
yes, Bill was talking, but
he at least foresaw the victory of Judaism over Germanism, and that was important. He wrote that. He was a journalist that wrote that in the 1870s. He knew about the coming problems with the Jews, and it surely came to fruition. And I had to shut Bruce's microphone off. Because his speaker doesn't work. If you can't listen, you can't join in a group conversation. So that's the way it is. And there you go. I'm not going to be nice anymore.
Well, that's like, the Benjamin Franklin's basic prophecy that if we don't exclude the Jews by absolutely enumerating them in the Constitution as being excluded from this country, that they were going to overrun it in 200 years, and he couldn't have been more on the money.
Actually, it didn't take 200 years. It took only 100.
Right.
They really didn't allow them to come in mass until the late 1800s, like 1880, 1890, and then from there, downhill we went. The more they let them in, the more Jewish we got. They took over the music. They took over the entertainment, theater, and motion pictures, and they just started to run everything. And they just applied their typical Jewish Canaanite religion of lascivious sex and senseless violence. That's their style.
Well, yeah, so I think Sword Brother and I are going to take a few diversions and cover Wilhelm Mars and a few other things before we finally get back to, I want to do a recap and really cap off the whole series with Hitler's own views of communism and socialism and their relation to Judaism from the pages of Mein Kampf, and then Hitler's declaration of war on the United States, which he really didn't want to do.
Yeah, he was always looking to the east. I've got that two or three times from Irving's books. I've got all of his books here. And even Goebbels in his diary says the same thing, that, you know, they don't want any war with France. They don't, all they want to do is make a good deal with England. They don't want nothing in the west. They only want to go east.
Most people don't understand the historical reasons why Hitler wanted to go east. All right? If you read Tacitus, okay, in Tacitus, and this is also evident in many other classical Greek writings, okay, Germania stretched to the Black Sea, and the Greeks considered, the later Greeks, not, of course, the word Germany doesn't appear until the first century B.C. in literature, right? The actual word Germania, and that they weren't called that until at least the beginning part of the first century by the Romans. And I think the first time I've actually seen the words is in Caesar. Theodorus Siculus does not use the words. He uses the term Galatahi to describe the German people. But he considered all the land north of the Danube to belong to the Galatahi, who the Greeks knew that was the Greek term for the German people, and the people the Romans later called Germans, Germania. And in Tacitus, Germania stretched to the Black Sea. Germania stretched to the Tanais River that emptied into the Black Sea from the north. Today that river is called the Don, okay? And the Slavic tribes and the Huns and the Magyars, they pushed into Europe in large numbers in the 6th through the 10th centuries. Okay? And there were a couple of Slavic tribes in Europe before that, but they were concentrated in the region of the Balkans and what we know as Bulgaria and Romania. All right? But they really pushed down the Danube River and into the Wends, got as far as Schleswig-Holstein, and they were repulsed by Otto I in the 10th century, or the 11th century, the 10th century. Well, these Slavic tribes started pushing and pushing the Germanic tribes west and pressuring them to the west and to the north. And Hitler saw that as a push back eastwards as basically a reparation, because he saw those lands as historically, there's no way Otto I was Jewish, Joe. And Otto I is probably the greatest German king ever, or damn close to it.
Yeah, that's where I got my name from.
Well, Hitler saw that as a reparation, that he wanted to push back and take back some of that land that he saw as historically German. Now, we in identity only know that what we were supposed to pass through that land, but Hitler didn't have that Christian identity awareness, and he does not Yeah, you know, he saw that as historic German lands. The Germans were there before the Slavs, and he wanted some of them back because the Slavs had been pushing west for hundreds of years. So he didn't see it as a crime, and he rightfully didn't see it as taking Slavic land because they had taken land that Germans inhabited first, or at least maybe not first in all history, but first before the Slavic tribes. So that's my opinion of Hitler's viewpoint in that regard.
Well, good night, everybody. It's been a good discussion. I'll see you
good
tomorrow.
Night. Good night, Tom. Yeah, I think I'm going to go, too. I was just ready to say the same. Tom's going to be picking me up early in the morning to do some work. So, pleasure speaking with you guys.
Okay, Matt. Take care. God bless, guys.
Yeah, they got something to talk about all day long. Work gets slow. I went to the Mein Kampf website. And where was it here? I clicked on the, went down to Wilhelm Marr's Victory, and the image of the book there, I clicked on that, and it says page not found. Has that been moved, I guess?
Now, I'll look at it later. Stephen found a couple of broken links before also, and I'll have to look and try to imagine what happened.
Okay.
But these might be... Still problems that I hadn't caught yet from when I moved the sites to their own server, right?
Okay.
Well, which was only about 7 or 8 weeks ago.
Well, that's an eternity sometimes around here.
Well, yeah, it is, but it takes me that long to find problems when I miss them, and usually other people find them first, but a lot of other people might run into a problem, and they don't tell me.
Yeah, they give up. Now, the link with the red ink...
My internet connection is pretty much shot right now. I have to reboot my router, but I'm not going to do it until after this program.
The headline where it goes to the Occidental Observer, that works. It gets through.
Yeah, I'm having a problem with some of my PDFs.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to look at what happened.
Lately,
because the PDFs are still there. I may have moved them, or they might be in a different directory, or something stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Lately, I've been, I don't know what the problem is or how I picked it up. Whenever I open up a PDF, it says plug-in hyphen, and it gives the name of the PDF. And that's when it's online. And I can't figure out why that is. And then it starts to tell me they have to go through and search it for something.
Well, that's something you have installed in your browser. That's a program, maybe a virus program or something you installed in your browser that's causing that.
I have to find where it is because I don't know where.
Well, you could look at your plugins in Firefox or even in Explorer and see what's running and disable them pretty easily.
Microsoft Windows Media Player? No, that wouldn't be it. Yes.
Well, what else is going on?
Well, today I went to, early this evening, I went to a lecture on soil conservation. And I found out that in the Midwest, in most of the farm states, you know, where it's heavy farming, most of the farms are not owned by the farmers. They're renters.
Well, of course not.
Yeah. And so a renter never really has much use for the property quite like the owner does, but most of the owners are absentee. And of those, a significant portion of them live out of the state where the property is. And they said that
in Florida, in Miami Beach probably.
Yeah, in California. Yeah, they said there's a lot in California. Half of the soil, the topsoil, has been lost in the last 100 years, like since 1900, let's say. And they estimate that the second half that remains will be gone within 100 to 150 years.
Well, that's what happens when you farm the shit out of land. You don't replace the nutrients that you take with anything but garbage and artificial fertilizers, chemical fertilizers, and you don't practice Yahweh's land Sabbaths.
Yeah, the 7 year, let it go fallow, just let it grow out. Yeah,
and they don't let everything die there, and go back into the soil.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't fertilize with natural fertilizer, which is manure.
Mm-hmm.
They won't fertilize. In fact, it's illegal in a lot of places, I believe.
Yeah, and someone mentioned, I didn't know this, someone mentioned in California that in the name of food safety, they almost sterilize the soil. They wipe out the germs, they wipe out the bacteria, they wipe out the worms.
Yeah, right. And they don't address the real problem in the first place of the Mexican pigs they got working on our farms.
Well, yeah, they just defecate on the vegetables and throw it in the truck, and we get it.
Basically, that's what happens.
Yeah.
If you want real food safety, get rid of the Mexicans.
Yeah, really. They were saying that in Iowa, in one 30-day period, they lost 7 tons per acre of soil. And every year they lose about 24 to 50 tons per acre per year in 2008 and 2009. That's a lot of soil. It just washes off, goes into the rivers, clogs the rivers up, makes a higher bank, and then when it rains, it floods even easier because all the soil got down there, the sediment, and it settled to the bottom of the river, and then it just makes it easier for the flood, heavy rains to flood out and get into the cities and even in the farmland itself.
Well, a real organic farm is its own little ecosystem that's wholly independent, and government intervention and regulation has broken too many links in that ecosystem for it to remain that way, right?
Yeah, and also Big Ag runs the agriculture department, so they will just come up with their rules and regulations, and they will rule over and then rule out organic farming and the small farmers.
Right. And like Israel DNA said, a lot of it's attributable to usury, and that's correct, and one crime leads to another, leads to another, leads to another. It's always fits that pattern.
Yeah. So we
because
know who to get
usury,
rid of.
A farmer that thought about letting part of his land rest every 7 years would go bust because he's in debt and paying interest on the debt. So they can't afford a land Sabbath, right? Yahweh commanded a land Sabbath, and he commanded that we don't ever borrow or pay money at usury.
Most of the corn going here is enough for the table. It's for feeding cattle. It's for the ethanol. And it's for corn that's used as food additives and ingredients like that. It's not meant for like corn on a cob at the table. And they said that if Iowa had... Now, this reminds me of the Ukraine. And I sent you a video recently. Not right away, I don't want you to put it up. But it's called The Harvest of Despair, The Bolsheviks' Mass Starvation of the Ukraine. And this the comment that this woman made, the lecturer reminded me of the Ukraine when she said that some woman who was the Secretary of Agriculture, at least while Bush was in there, I guess, Bush too, said that to compare, Iowa has, I think, 80% of the food that Iowa eats comes from out of state, that we ship all kinds of food out, but all the food that we eat has to be shipped in from out of state. And if they somehow put a barrier around Iowa...
That they probably don't want to eat all that genetically modified crap they're growing.
Yeah. Well, they use it for a lot of different things other than food. But if they put a barrier around, and she says the comparison was, according to this agriculture secretary or assistant agriculture secretary, was that if they had some kind of pestilence or if they had an outbreak of disease and they had to kind of quarantine all of Iowa, all we have is about 3 days' worth of food for everyone in Iowa. And then we would starve, obviously. They didn't say starve, but we only have 3 to 4 days of food on the shelves and in the homes to be able to survive. So in less than 10 days, 50, maybe a month at the most, all of Iowa would have starved to death. And then the big bankers could come in here and just swoop up all the land, knock down the buildings, turn it all into one huge farm. And you extrapolate it out to Illinois and to Wisconsin and to... Minnesota and Nebraska, stuff like that. There's very little food stored up in everybody's house, and we're on the verge of starvation, and we don't even know it.
Well, you know, all of our cities are 3 days from starvation.
I've heard, and I don't have any proof, and I don't know why they would have any worry about this, that the police are supposedly have some special program where if there's some great emergency coming up where there's a food shortage, that the cops or somebody's going to go hustle over there and protect with their guns the grocery stores. Well, by the time they get there, all that food is going to be gone. Because as soon as the word gets out to those who really know, they'll hustle in there and just clean out those shelves in no time at all. I mean, just bam, the end of the day, when the word gets out, there will be no food on their shelves at all. In fact, people will probably beat others just to get the food that they did get. So that cut plan sort of falls away because there won't be enough food to last to the end of the day. And then you get these people that are selling freeze-dried food, you know, survival foods. And it's supposed they have like a 10-year, 15- and 20-year longevity before it turns bad.
MREs, and, right?
Yeah. Well, this is like freeze-dried peas in a sealed can and freeze-dried corn, stuff like that, you know, and meat and everything you have to have basically for a fairly rounded diet in a survival situation. And I think it's like, oh, some places charge maybe $700 for one person for a year's supply of food. Well, you know, if something really happened, I could see where these hucksters sell all this food. That's no good to begin with. It may last 5 years, but it's not going to last 10. And who are you going to go to when a place is falling apart and you're whooping up your cans of food and they're no good?
Well, you know something? Well, what about the guy that's going to save up all that food and somebody's going to come take it off him?
Yeah, I used to work for a Mormon, and he was bound and determined to get me to marry off to his divorcing daughter. It wasn't all that bad looking, but she had the two kids from somebody else, and I didn't want to raise somebody else's kids, you know. And I didn't want to become a Mormon either. And he's really kind of pushing on this, and I looked through some of his books he had laying around the office there, and he had like three wives. And this is in the 80s, and 1980s. I'm not that old, 1880. And and he was talking about how he showed me the big garage. He had his farm, so he had his huge garage, you know, and he had all the stuff stacked up there. And I says, have you ever tried any of this stuff? Oh, no, we're just waiting for the day when we need it. Every Mormon has this year's supply for the family, blah, blah. And they publish this, you know. And I says, what good does it do to have that? If anything ever happens, the first place people are going to go when they get hungry is the nearest Mormon's house. And if you don't give them food, they'll take it.
Well, yeah, I don't worry about saving up food for 6 months or a year or 2 years, because when the time comes, I'm going to get food. That there's no doubt.
Well, if you have you're out there sufficiently far enough, I think, to where you could have a vegetable garden and get some fruit trees, but you still have to eat something. You know, you may even be able to put up some wheat if you knew how to do it. I don't know. But when it gets desperate, you know, people will go over your fence and they'll take the food right out of your garden right in the middle of the night if they had to. They were starving.
Yeah, well, that's what it always boils down to. It's the law of the jungle, right? That's the way the niggers operate, and that's the way most people operate.
Maybe that's just our natural state, unless there's some kind of moral compulsion to turn us from it.
Well, I think most whites do have a moral compulsion to turn us from it. Well, what else is going on here? We got to have something else. It's only 11:43.
Yeah. And there's what? Only three people's microphones are on? The rest of them are sitting there?
If nothing good happens in the next 10 minutes, I'm going to probably end the program, but that's all right.
Sure enough. Yeah, all these other people with their mouths running off before, they're sitting there nice and quiet. They should get up and do something.
Well, I came in here for the alien stuff. I'm kind of all spent now. I was going to get on to Ezekiel 38 and 39, but I have to wait for 2 weeks
for
that.
Yeah, you'll have to wait until next week for 38 and 39, probably, because we're going to be on 37.
I've got to find this thing in the Acts and see if I can provoke poor Bill. I got to get the right thing here, but it's about the Simon that... offered money when he saw the disciples healing all these people, you know. Simon the Magician, I think they called him.
Yeah, right.
And he was looking at this and thought, wow. I'm just sort of extrapolating the word, you know. And he's saying, wow, this is great, you know. So what he does is he goes over there and says, hey, how much you want me to pay you to teach me how to do this? He figured he'd make money on it, because that's his style, that was his way of life, that's his philosophy, is to make money off this stuff, you know. And he was told, no, this is just the spirit. We're not going to sell it. Now, we don't. I don't really know how he had said that. I can't remember who it was. I'm looking here. I can't remember who it was that they talked to.
He was offering money to the apostles so that he could have the ability to endow people with the spirit and to do the things that they were doing.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember.
And Peter told him basically to keep his money because the powers of God weren't available for a trade, and they wouldn't do him any good.
Attitude. I was trying to find out the words he used, whether he yelled at him or just told him no. But most of the time, remember,
he was treating him pretty harshly.
Well, when you look at it from Simon's view, and most of the Bible commentaries condemn this guy for making this offer of money to learn how to heal people so he can make lots of money and also work miracles and magic tricks and stuff like that. But I kind of came to the conclusion that it's expected of Simon to do that. Because let's say he was a Jew.
Then we would expect him to do that, right?
Yeah. So there's no sense in yelling at a guy who's a Jew for asking if he could give you money to learn to do what you're doing so he can do it and make some money too.
The bottom line is I don't think that there's any indication in Scripture that he's a Jew.
Whatever he was trying to make money off of this.
There's a lot of white people today that make money off of Christianity, right? And they just endeavor to make more money off it. They don't care about the truth. They don't care about what they're really doing to people by lying to them and deceiving them.
Yeah, although, if I remember right, it really didn't say that this Simon was defrauding or cheating or lying anybody. He was just one of these types of magician type of
he was a huckster, which is what magicians are, right?
Yeah. So here's this huckster, as you call him, and he's offering money. Now, most people think he's a rotten guy, but, you know, I kind of think he's more honest than some of those Christians because he thought that he could buy it, and he knew that he wanted to make money off of it. If he was sneaky, he'd say, teach me this, and he wouldn't offer any money. And then he'd go out and make a lot of money. But he was kind of honest about it, saying, hey, I'll pay you to teach me so I can go out and make money too. So in a way, the guy was honest about it. He says, I'll give you money for this. This is good. I can make some bucks off this one. If he was really a liar and a cheater and a defrauder, he wouldn't have offered any money at all. He'd have just snuck in there, learned, and snuck out and started making some money.
But that takes time. Maybe he didn't have time. A man's heart is always going to reveal his intentions, right?
True, unless he's really clever. Some people can really hide the truth.
Well, yeah, and eventually you'll get caught. I mean, some people get caught too late, right? But
yeah, but this guy would have paid money. He would have learned, or he would have kept his mouth shut, and he would have learned. But he wasn't deceptive. He was in his own way. He was honest. He knew he was going to make money off this deal, so he was like going to a wholesaler and buying something so he could turn around and sell it retail.
Well, right, and he was used as an example.
Yeah, so the guy was really honest in going to the disciples.
And today people do the same thing. They go to the Dallas Theological Seminary, and they say, hey, I'll give you money, and you enroll me as a student and teach me how to huckster people.
There you go.
And that's exactly what they do when they turn out a whole bunch of little John Hagees.
And the Moody Bible Institute and stuff like that.
Hey, Muniker and Bill, doesn't one scripture say buy the truth and sell it not?
I don't know.
Well,
I got my...
Well, right. And it also says that a workman is worthy of his salary, right?
Yes, that's true. So maybe Simon was saying, oh, okay, I'll buy the truth.
Yeah, and I can't condemn them. I know that he was not right in expecting that, but he was honest in his own way. So I can't really condemn the guy. You know.
It's funny. I read that too yesterday, Muniker, and when you had mentioned you thought he might be a Jew, but Bill said he didn't think so. I don't think so either, because Peter tells him, you know, that he should pray to Yahweh and basically ask for forgiveness, and
and maybe Yahweh will forgive him.
Well, because he thought he could use the ability in trade.
Yeah.
He does mention to him if he was someone that wasn't worth saving, he wouldn't even tell him go try to repent or pray for forgiveness. What Simon Magus said was
why don't you pray for me?
Right, and then it ends. I think then it ends, and I was curious.
Yeah, it kind of ends.
Which
basically means that Simon wouldn't even pray, right?
Well, I didn't know if I could reach that conclusion because it just ended, and I'm like, you know, did he take his admonition and go pray himself, or it kind of is incomplete.
Well, here it's at the end. I finally got my program going here. It says, therefore, repent of this wickedness of yours and pray the Lord that, if possible, the intention of your heart may be forgiven you. For I see that you are in the gall of bitterness and in the bondage of iniquity. But Simon answered and said, pray to the Lord for me yourselves so that nothing of what you have said may come upon me.
We're all well, Acts 11, Acts 12, Acts 13. I know it's in there somewhere.
Oh, this is Acts 8. Down about verse 20, when he starts to criticize Simon. May your silver perish with you, because you thought you could obtain the gift of God with money.
And Simon, seeing that through the laying on of hands the ambassadors the Spirit has given, offered them money, saying, give also to me this authority, in order that upon whom I should place the hands, he would receive the Holy Spirit. And Peter said to him, your silver with you would be for destruction, because you have believed that the gift of Yahweh is to be acquired with money. There is no part, no portion for you in this word, for your heart is not forthright before Yahweh. Therefore repent from this evil of yours and entreat of the prince or of the Lord. If then the intention of your heart shall be remitted for you or forgiven. For I see that you are in the gall of bitterness and the bond of unrighteousness. In other words, he was bound to unrighteousness because he cared more about money than the word. So Simon must have perceived him as an Israelite, I would think, and not as a kike. Not that Simon was a good judge of that, as the Gospels would prove out. 24. And replying, Simon said, you entreat on my behalf to the prince, but not anything of what you spoke would come upon me.
So he didn't go and pray on his own, but he could have, probably.
Right. So then, affirming with testimony and speaking the word, the prince, while returning to Jerusalem, then announced the good message. Simon Magus is never mentioned again, until some of the records of the early church fathers.
Yeah.
Which are spurious. He's mentioned Pseudo-Clement or something as founding some false religion, preaching in Rome, and it's really spurious.
Hmm.
And I wouldn't buy into it.
Well, how about if you read 8:13, it says, then Simon himself believed also, and when he was baptized, he continued with Philip and wandered, beholding the miracles and signs which were done. So that kind of states it. He believed the message.
Well, he believed what he saw, and he wanted to make money off it, evidently.
But my point...
Well, I think that was...
Go ahead. My point was that this Simon Magus was honest enough to admit that he wanted to give money so he could make money. He wasn't sneaky. Now, if he was a Jew, really a Jew...
He'd smile brightly and walk in. But because a lot of people that are crooked think everybody's like them. So he probably didn't realize that he should have been sneaky, right?
Maybe there are people
in the world that think everything's for sale.
It only says he wanted to buy it. It didn't say what he wanted to have that power for, that purpose.
Only evident that he's probably going to take it and turn it around and sell it.
But then we make these presumptions.
Then you get into that there again, conjecture, presumptions.
Kind of judging him before with absolutely nothing.
It's being judgmental. It's judging human nation. It's right. like Pilgrim said, the implication is crass motivation. You have to be able to judge human nature.
Yeah.
If well, I had something good and you want to buy it off me, it's because you want to make you perceive that it's very valuable and you could make the profit from it instead of me.
But how come
we see that in human nature over and over again?
But how come in this case you can reach for that, but then other cases you'll say, well, if it's not scripture in scripture, then I don't know if I can
well, it's
go
my
that far
from human nature and from what I see happening here. I'm not reaching for it.
So we might have to take look at this from a bifurcated view, two different views. One is that he just offered money to learn how to do what they're doing, or the other is that he offered money to learn what they were doing so he could do what they do and make money off of it.
Well, Peter's response shows that Simon's heart was in the wrong place.
Well, maybe Peter jumped to the same conclusion we did, and maybe he was wrong.
Well, I'm going by Peter's response, and it doesn't seem like Peter's just jumping around.
Well, he knew him, probably, or the small area there. He probably knew who he was. Somebody goes around like Magnus and making these magicians and doing all these supposed miracles and tricks. I imagine the word got around about him, so Simon Peter probably knew about this Simon Magnus before he came around. So he could probably throw those words at him with knowledge of forethought, but we don't know.
From this evil of yours. So Peter knew that his motives were evil.
Yeah.
And he says, you would believe the gifts of Yahweh is to be acquired with money. Your silver with you would be for destruction.
So we would have to rely on Simon Peter's understanding of this other Simon.
Well, right. His understanding was that the guy had motivations to make a profit from it. That he was making an investment by buying this from the apostles.
Yeah.
And that's what Peter's response tells me, and I don't have to reach for anything, Joe.
Well, no, I agree with you in the sense. I think Peter's response says a lot more than what's written always in the Scripture. And this is what I'm finding out, whether I'm right or wrong, is I'm starting to, like I say, I'm starting to think, just because I read something here, I think you have to use, like a detective, you have to use other clues of what's being written. You can't just go and say, well, I read this in this part, so I'm going to take that at face value. Sometimes you have to look beyond it, I think, just like you're doing in this case or what I would do in this case. Because the overall picture, you know, and I go by Peter's comment that, there's probably a nefarious motive behind Simon's request. But, you know, like there was a couple scriptures I pointed out or Municher pointed out that, you know, didn't make Simon seem, you know, so bad. So not everything, I think, is being revealed. And at least that's
what
I'm starting.
Well, for I see that you were in the gall of bitterness and the bond of unrighteousness. That means that you had bad motivations.
Well, you could come out of it, though, right? If he was in it, he could come out of it.
Well, that's what Peter's telling him, to come out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he, the guy don't even want to pray. Oh, you pray for me.
Yeah. Well, a lot of Catholics do that. They discharge their duty to pray for themselves.
Well, right,
but
his response wasn't, okay, I'll pray, but you also pray for me. His response was just, you entreat on my behalf. That was his response. He wasn't humble at all. He showed no humiliation whatsoever.
Well, yeah, and you got to remember, though, this is a guy, Peter, now, that has the Holy Spirit, and the other guy, Simon, is a guy just approaching it without the Holy Spirit. So, you know, it's kind of, I mean, I'm not writing Simon off as, I mean, some people write this off and say, well, he's just purely evil, and I don't know whatever became of Simon, but, you know, this to me, I take it as it's not so much Peter as the Holy Spirit in him, you know, understanding, perceiving things, rebuking him, correcting him. But, you know, there again, Peter has this Holy Spirit now on him that gives him this ability to make these judgments and understandings. Simon's coming at it from a point of view of he wasn't even touched by the Holy Spirit. He wasn't even...
From Peter's answers, I see that Simon Magus was a dishonest man. And he probably wasn't a Jew, as can be shown by Peter's indicating that he had the ability to repent. So he probably wasn't an Edomite, but he surely had the huckster mindset.
And I think some ways he's probably like a lot of people that we would know that, you know, hey, you see a good deal, hey, or maybe I can improve my lot in life. You know, I'm sure that quality's in all of us, or could be in all of us.
Well, if you understand the several illustrations given in the book of Acts, right, that there's this one with Simon Magus, there's the one with the two men that had the woman, the girl, the slave girl, that was that had the power of divination because she was possessed by a demon, right? That's the second example. And the third example is Demetrius the silversmith, who actually admitted having an easy living from the idols that he sold at the temple of Diana or Artemis in Ephesus. So that's the third example that I could think of in Acts, and there's probably one or two more. And all three examples have something in common. All three examples have somebody making an easy, comfortable living by selling religion to people.
Or religious artifacts, yeah. Relating to people who are selling religion. There'll be two parts to this fraud. One is the people that are selling religion, and the other one is this one that's making these silver idols.
Well, right. He's making idols and selling them. He's basically selling religion.
Right.
It's the other end of it. Yeah, you know, if you don't, if the priest sells you religion, you're going to come to me and buy the idols, right? But he's basically selling religion. It's all three have that in common, and that's a thread throughout the book of Acts. But if you read the Greek histories, you'll find that it's fits very well into the cultural context, that it's very true.
That's how I tend to my first impressions of when I hear Simon is that there was probably that motivation somehow, and of that era and day, that he was looking to make a profit off of this power, like you're saying, whether it be selling through a trinkets, idols.
Well, right, and today we see the same examples over and over again.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, when I was a kid, my uncle took me to St. John the Divine. It's a huge, beautiful, Gothic-type cathedral in New York City, right? I was raised Catholic, so we went to St. John the Divine. I think it's actually a Protestant cathedral, I'm not sure. Well, anyway, we went to this cathedral, and it's a really beautiful place. It's an amazing building. It really is. I'm glad I saw it. It was all stonework, and they were still working on it and expanding it in the 70s when I went. But they had in the corner of it that they had a big souvenir shop right smack in the church. I couldn't believe it. When I was a kid, I couldn't believe it. I was like, this just don't look right. There's the altar, and there are the pews, and here's the souvenir shop. Well, what's up with that?
Well, that is clearly, that's right out there like a neon light.
Well, I thought it was.
I think that's the one.
Sorry, Munich, go ahead.
I think that St. John Divine Church is the one that has such wonderful acoustics that people will go there to play and record their organ music.
The building was absolutely stunning. It really is a beautiful building. It's a damn shame the Catholics got so much money to waste.
Or any of those churches that have the money to waste. You know, why do they put it into all these churches? It's like we've got a better church than you do. Ours is bigger, ours is better, you know. Why can't they just rent a room?
Yeah, my uncle liked taking me to, when me and my brother were kids, my uncle liked taking us to all the religious, meccas in New York City, right? We went to the cloisters, we went to St. Patrick's, we went to St. John's.
Well, he took you places, you know, education, which is good.
Well, Bill, go ahead, Munich. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that by taking children to places like that, it stimulates the mind into greater thoughts than just, you know, sandlot baseball or something like that, or watching television. You know, to contemplate, if he could tell you what it takes to get this sort of activity to build something like that, or what his purpose is. And even if he says nothing at all, just looking at this, wow. It's like going to the museum, you see a big dinosaur up there in his bones, you know, or some big fish swimming around the aquarium goes past you, wow, you know. So it's a good education for children to take them places like that. And even if it seems simple, it's big to a child. That's really something. I'm done.
Well, Bill, you know, it was funny because I mentioned there was a couple things in Acts. Last night I read, I guess, Acts 1 through 8. That's how I remember the Simon story. But I came across this one I was going to ask you about and asked you if what I saw was correct in one way. It's the Acts 4:36, and it talks about, it says, and I don't know how to pronounce that, Joseph, who by the apostles was surnamed Barnabas, which is being interpreted the son of consolation, a Levite, and of the country of Cyprus, having land, sold it and brought the money and laid it at the apostles' feet. Well, what jumped out at me last night was it says he was a Levite. And then I started thinking, according to the ancient law, a Levite wasn't supposed to have any land or property, and he's selling his land and property. So I was going to ask
you about...
Well,
right. In the kingdom, they weren't supposed to have land or property because they had their living from the people from the other tribes, right? They collected that tithe.
Right, exactly.
But there was no more tithe when there was no more kingdom.
Well, yeah, I was just wondering then, so why in this scripture verse, why does it mention he's a Levite? What is that? It's not in there just to fill the space. There's got to be a reason why, supposedly, the whole early scripture or the Holy Spirit had them write down.
Well, because it was factually true that he was a Levite.
I'm starting to wonder if...
The right question is, why would Yahweh choose a Levite for this, right? That's the correct question. That would be the correct, but the correct question wouldn't be why is the term he was a Levite there? Evidently that was important to Luke to show us that this man was from Cyprus and he was a Levite.
Well, I'm not following why you're saying the bigger question would be asked, why would Yahweh choose a Levite in this situation?
Well, right, because the guy was a Levite. It says that. It had to be factually true. So why wouldn't it say it if Luke had the information? Why wouldn't he include it? Because most of the apostles were Benjaminites.
Yeah, see, but what I'm saying is then if most of them were Benjaminites, why, like, it's pointing it out for some reason that they're clearly telling you this man was a Levite, but I don't understand why or the importance of it.
So
that's not a really good answer, though. Why not? That's...
Well, I don't see why, you know, you want me to look into the mind of God to imagine why we have to know this guy's a Levite. He's a Levite. And after the kingdom fell apart and the Israelites were taken away, the Levites weren't any different than any other people. They lost their position.
Depends on which version you're looking at. King James says that he was a son of a Levite, but the New American Standard says...
The son of a Levite would still be a Levite, Ron. He's still in the tribe of Levi. The son of a Levite. Levi's a tribe. It's not a job.
If you're a Levite and you have a son, he's going to be a Levite. I mean, unless the mother's another.
Now there's a distinction between the Levites and the priests, and that's that the priests, the ones that did the temple service, they only descended from Aaron. Legitimately, the original legitimate temple priests only descended from Aaron. So all temple priests are Levites, but not all Levites are temple priests, right?
Yeah.
But if you're a Levite, your son's going to be a Levite. I'm trying. What verse is this specifically, Joel?
It was 4:36.
4:36. Good, because I started at 1, right? Interpreted, he's a Levite, a Cypriot by birth. So he was a Levite born on Cyprus. And they would have had to have a means of living because they no longer had a tithe.
Well, this gets into my question that I was going to ask you, too, when I was reading in the Acts and thinking about Jerusalem at that time. What were these, like the Pharisees, where did these Pharisees arise from, and how did the people accept them? There was no such thing as Pharisees in the ancient Israel world.
Well, there's different things going on here, okay? The Pharisee is a political party, and all of the priests and the Levites and the other leaders joined one of the political parties. Otherwise, you had no real voice in the community. That's the way it boiled down to a downward slide into politics in the second century. According to Josephus, the Pharisees were around before the Edomite absorption, before the Maccabees decided to absorb the Edomites. John Hyrcanus, specifically, decided to absorb the Edomites and have them all circumcised. Before that event, Josephus mentions Pharisees for the first time in a context that's probably around 150 B.C. So the Pharisees evidently existed as early as 150 B.C. Now I want you to get, you know, this is the Hellenistic period. The history of the period, even in Josephus, is very sketchy because there are very few sources. And Josephus, I believe he produced the best that he could with the few sources that he had, right? And basically, he doesn't have much more than what's in the Book of Maccabees. He has a little more, but not much more. Now, the word Pharisee means separatist, all right? Now, it's my personal belief, it's my opinion, okay, that the Pharisees were separatists and existed as a party because there was probably already pressure in the Hellenistic age to allow or to bring some of the surrounding peoples into Judaism. Okay? That's my opinion as to why they existed at that early time, that they resisted that. That's why you had a political party called separatists, because that's what Pharisee means. Okay?
Now, you're saying Judaism, they're bringing into Judaism or bringing into the Israelite temple?
Well, it's Judaism because it's already corrupted, so I'm calling it Judaism. It's already corrupted just because they had the idea that they could bring other people into it, so that means it must have been corrupted already. Right? Well, that's my opinion.
Well, race mixing and stuff like that.
Right. They had the idea they could go out and convert these Edomites into Judeans, so they were already screwed up.
And
that's my opinion.
This would be about 150 B.C., which means the Talmud of the Babylonian religions was started in 500 B.C. and was supposedly brought to a final.
When was the Talmud started in 500 B.C.? There's no evidence at all for the existence of the Talmud in writing before 300 A.D.
I'm just trying to remember what I've seen in Jewish writings where another one's saying that the beginning of the Talmud, not the Talmud, but the beginning that ends up being the Talmud.
I think the B.C. and A.D. confused. I really do in this context.
Well, there was, my memory says there was 1,000 years it took to write the Talmud. And the rabbis said, blah, 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 you know, 500 B.C. to 500 A.D., and then they stopped it and says, okay, that's it. We'll just work with what we have. So, and then they collected all of the writings and put it together.
Well, that's all lies, because there's no Talmud there is absolutely no evidence of existence of a Talmud before the 3rd century A.D., period.
Well, let's try this on just to compare. I would say here, just guess from what I've read and what little I know, there was no Bible as we know it in 500 B.C.
Yes, there was.
All these different writings were different people, the different prophets and the chronicles and such. Were they all gathered into one major book?
Well, no, but you had the Book of the Law, which is the Torah referred to at maybe 700 B.C. it's already being referred to. Mm-hmm. And it's referred to in the Bible even before that. It's referred to in the other books, in the books of Samuel and Kings.
Now, this is the first five books, Genesis and Exodus,
yes.
And like that? All bound, in effect, into one book?
Well, basically, yes, all considered the same collection. Mm-hmm. They're all considered the same collection under the same title of the Book of the Law or the Books of Moses. But the books of the prophets, it was all generally considered the scriptures. But no, there wasn't one book called a Bible until the canonization of the Christian scriptures by the proto-Romish Church, and I'll call it that and leave it at that, in the 4th century. But that's even then it really wasn't. They didn't have any authority to impose it on other bishops and other Christian assemblies until after the time of Justinian in the 6th century.
Yeah.
And even then, they only had the power to impose it on assemblies that were within the empire, right?
Yeah. Or any assembly that was outside of it but wanted to participate with those that were within the empire. Like if you had a Methodist church, the United Methodist Church, so be established as a church. Well, they agreed to establish that church according to the principles of the United Methodists and all the dogma and doctrines and stuff like that. That would be about the only way they could extend it. And that's by conquest of the country, like they did with Ireland. They brought in the Roman Catholic faith into Ireland, where there already were Christians worshiping Yahweh. In fact, I remember reading where Palladian first and then St. Patrick went in, and those two found more Christians than they converted. So I can see where the Roman...
Well, yeah, right, and that's true, that there were... The Celtic Holy Church was entirely independent of Rome, existed long before Rome had ever accepted Christianity, and Ireland was and much of Scotland and Britain were Christian to a great degree long before the Romish Church came along.
Yeah. Which I think is one reason why the Pope, the Bishop of Rome, I'd like to call him. They gave a bull, a laudabiliter, and it was lauding the conduct or the plans of Edward II, I think it was, to invade Ireland to establish the Roman Catholic Church. Well, everybody knew that there already was a religion there in 1170 or something like that. But the Pope says, hey, go ahead. You got my blessing to go in there and conquer it, and I'll give you a bunch of priests to follow in after you. And they did. And
they basically stole Christianity from the cult in Ireland from the Irish priests, right?
Yeah, and then they went through there, and a guy named some smarty ass Englishman went along with them, and Cambrinus something like that, and Giraldus Cambrinus something, and he went through there, and his job was to collect all of the literature of the existing. Irish version of Christianity, and gather all those documents and all the records and everything and destroy them. And he did, as much as he could get, anyway.
Yeah, well, sure, typical Catholics.
Yeah, yeah. And they scoffed at him and looked upon him as though they were just savages. Typical propaganda, you know. So I could see why anybody who would be in Rome, subject to Rome, where they'd have to go along with this Roman Catholic Church idea.
Yeah, it was basically forcing all the assemblies, but that didn't happen until after the time of Justinian.
I was thinking about that word Christian. Who was first started?
It appears in Acts. It appears, I think, in the end of Acts 15 or something.
In Antioch, and they were using it as a jest. The pagans or whoever else was using it as a jest, a joke about these Christians.
But don't you think, I was starting to think, that's one of the points that got us screwed up because,
Acts 11:26.
We're Israelites, and they take our mind off of that thought of who we are.
Joe, there's prophecy that said we'll never be called by that name again. I hope you realize that.
Not by what name again?
So there's prophecy that says that his people will have a new name.
and not be called Israelites? Was that
right?
Then why do I mean?
Yeah.
It seems like all we're doing here is saying we're the lost tribe of Israel.
Well, right. We're claiming to be those people, and our claim is true historically, and that doesn't mean that we should change our name to that.
But it said if our name is going to be changed from Israel.
Well, the name of my website isn't Israel Ogenia.
But even you know, at even this point of it, Christ, it's an untranslated word, and it's like when people keep talking about angels and they start in their mind thinking this angel is this certain kind of species being. But an angel, doesn't an angel, all it means is messenger?
If
someone brought me a message, he's an angel.
Right.
But this is where I think if people want to keep saying we're Christians or use that word, you're just using a Greek word that's untranslated. So to me, it's already flawed and got us screwed up.
Well, I got a paper about that, Joe. It's called Yahweh's Anointed, the Children of Israel. It's on my website. You should read it.
Well, no, I can see. I can understand what the word means, but even at your website, why didn't you call it the Anointed Ones?
Well, why? Because I want to get in people's faces, and they'll know exactly what I mean, Christogenia. Well, anybody with any education in Greek.
I guess my point is this. That's when I start looking at this, I start thinking, where does it start going off the rails? And we start losing understanding. And
let's put it this way. The scripture says that we be called by a new name that Yahweh himself shall name, and he didn't speak in English. He spoke in Greek.
I think he more spoke in thought than he did even
in
Greek.
Who said, and what verse is that? What prophecy? Or who said that prophecy?
Which one?
Oh, the one Bill just mentioned. No, the one Bill just mentioned about the new name.
Isaiah 62.
I think some people interpret Christ as meaning truth. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, like divine. Like, mean that by any means.
It doesn't?
No.
What does Christ mean then?
Anointed. It's an adjective. It means period.
You blacked out there. When you're talking,
it's an adjective. It only means anointed, period. Doesn't mean anything else except rubbed with oil. But that's the process of anointing, right?
Yeah. So in other words, the suffix ian means of or belonging to, and therefore of or belonging to the anointed, or those who anoint. That'd be right.
Looking from a
grammatical. So the anointed. So instead of calling us Christians, we call ourselves the anointed.
That's why I wrote the paper, to explain that.
I'm looking for it again here. What was the title of it?
Yahweh's Anointed, the Children of Israel. Explains the whole word, explains the whole historical and New Testament perspective.
You know, the problem we have here with the word Christian is that these idiots have ground that word down just like National Socialism has been ground down.
Well, right, but we shouldn't let them have the word because they abuse it. We shouldn't cede it.
Well, the problem is that when you mention that, and it's a buzzword, it's like saying the word nigger sometimes. It's just buzzword and, geez, Baptist, thumpers on the Bible on the street corner and all that.
But we shouldn't let them have our word.
They've got it.
And I'm not going to cede it to them.
Well, they've got it. And they're making us look bad. So sometimes I wonder if we should just use a different word just to be able to go around it. Then once we get rid of them, then
that's like, how, when do we stop running? The Jews use Israel.
Well, we're not running.
Bill, our new name, though, what's our new name? You can't tell me it's just going to be Christ. Christians. That can't be it.
Yeah, you don't think that's it? That's definitely it.
I'm saying that because, Isaiah says this, that, okay, we'll be called a new name, and he leaves it at that. Well, that leaves it up in the air. Nobody knows at that point what it's going to be.
Well, he was called Joshua, and he was called Christ, and we were supposed to be called by his name. So which one do you want to pick? Municher just was saying,
though, that someone come up with that as almost a derogatory statement for these believers in the Messiah.
Well, this is only the last 100 years that's happened, right?
No, but I'm even saying back then,
100 years ago, Christian and white what was practically synonymous.
Yeah,
but I still think
And the kings of Europe described Europe as Christendom for 1,000 years. And it's only the last 100 years that it's gotten the bad image in the Jew media that Munacher is saying that it's got. And I'm not going to cede the name to them. I'm not going to participate in a white flight.
But
do you think
originally it had its roots in a derogatory name?
Never. Of course not. It hasn't been considered, you know, it hasn't been looked down upon as Munacher describes until very recently in history. And that, yeah, you know, we're told there would be scoffers in the last time. We know who they are. But I'm not going to give up and flee because they're scoffing.
Well, okay, let me ask you this then, because I don't know it offhand. What does the name Israel mean?
He who rules with God.
I've seen a lot of different definitions. He who is, fights with God, he who fights for God, God fights
for
him.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of clowns, all right? It's he who rules with God.
Ezra El. Ezra meaning rule. El.
Now, is that what part of speech? Is that a noun, verb, adjective? Like you're saying Christian is an adjective.
Yeah, he said anointed. He said it's like the anointed. The IAN.
Israel is not one word in Hebrew, Joe.
Was it two? Isn't it like a contraction?
Yeah, I would have to actually look it up.
I think Ezrael, I think is what it was.
Some people think it means God prevails or God rules.
Well,
so,
obviously, that
so
kind of
why
explains.
Wasn't so then why well why wasn't okay when Paul you know Paul comes along and then he's talking about he's a Benjamite, it seems like these guys didn't just all of a sudden say you know what I got a new name now.
Hit me with this again, Joe.
No, I'm just saying I mean from what it seems like
what
I read
the
and they start
mean about yeah you know how many scriptures are there where it says they who were called by my name. How many scriptures are there, they who were called by my name?
Well, that's what, you know, I don't know.
There's a lot, Joe, and you've read the Bible, and you should friggin' know.
You should know that.
It's only, just go look it up, Joe. Just go get your concordance and look up the phrase name, the word name, and see, I'll bet it's 50 times, Joe, called by my name.
Well, yeah, I was going to mention this too because
which name is that, Joe?
Well, no, that's what
is
I was going to say
or
to you.
Is it Christ?
I think we've lost it because I was going to mention
no,
this.
No, no, Joe, we haven't lost.
We
it.
Have.
The scripture's
Bill.
Been fulfilled. You're being a
no.
clown now.
No,
you're being
no.
a name clown.
Well, okay, let me answer. Let me just speak for a second.
The scripture's been fulfilled, Joe.
Let me just speak this. I'm only. Honestly, let me get this out.
Say makes sense, Joe.
Well, okay, it may not make sense, but let me express my thought here. Because that when I was thinking about in Acts, like I said, I read it last night, and it said, like Peter would say, you know, silver or gold I have, but you know, in this name, and they keep mentioning the name, and when they were brought before the Pharisees, and they said, how did you do this miracle? How did this blind or the deaf or the crippled man walk? And they're like in this name. And it seemed like with this name they were doing these miracles. And I said, I think that name for whatever that name was, they knew it at that time. But we don't know it at this point. I think if we knew the real name, whatever they were using, there would be power in that
Joe,
name.
Joe, they
you
weren't
know?
Using the magic spell. They were talking about the name of Christ.
But there was I don't think that has power
apart from iniquity.
But you know why, Bill? Because if you use that today, or if you use Jesus today, that there's no, it's not doing what those guys did. There's something is spoken, and that they spoke a
Joe,
word.
Joe, you're looking for a magic spell. You're a clown.
I'm not.
You're
looking
for a magic
spell.
The lost magic spell that the Jews have been searching for 2,000 years. How
I don't
to
think Joe's talking
no,
about
I'm not, because,
in order
no,
to
I'm
make
not.
Whatever you want to happen, happen.
No,
you're a Jew looking for a magic spell, Joe.
No, I'm not, Bill, because you
yes,
know why?
Yes, you are.
No, because
you
even in the Old Testament.
Go read that paper, Joe. Which is it, Lord or Yahweh? And Clifton's article explains the whole thing. All right, you're a Jew looking for a magic spell. That's
no,
what
I'm.
Just, that's no, what you've just owned up to, Joe. You fail again. You go down in flames again, Joe. Yeah, you're not trying to Jew looking for a magic spell. You just admitted it.
Let's look at it a little different.
Well, we lost the magic name, Joe.
Let's look at it a little differently. Joe, shut up.
Wait, I'm
saying. Let's look at it a little differently. We've got this name Yahweh. We understand, is that the name of the God of Israel, Yahweh? And yet, when we look at it, when we study it up in the various places, all we really have was YHWH in the English language. And some people say,
no, we got more than that. I'm sorry. We got a lot more than that.
Burr is the full name.
Well, we got I-O-U-E in the Greek, in the Latin language.
What does that mean?
I-O-U-E. Yahweh.
But that's four letters, right?
Oh, they call it Jove. I'm sorry, but it's Yahweh.
Jove.
No.
Well, see, that's
and
Joe, I think what Joe's trying to say here.
The name of Yahweh can be spelled with four vowels. Well, go read my papers on the matter. Go read my papers and then come back and talk to me about it. Because obviously you haven't, or you would know the evidence.
I'm just saying, I see it in the scriptures too all the time. They keep mentioning a name, even in the Old Testament. In the Psalms, you always see they mention about his name.
We have his name Hebrew, Joe. You're ignoring it.
I think what Joe's trying to say here.
I'm
what Joe's trying to say here is that Joe's trying to say here.
Name has been lost, and that's the magic spell. That's what Joe's trying to say.
No, that's first of all, let me say this, and then we're going to drop the subject, not another goddamn 2.5 hours like the last time.
Well, that's what Joe does.
What Joe was saying is,
he stretches things out for 2.5 hours and talks in circles.
What Joe's, don't stop answering to him. What Joe is saying is they are saying that there is a name in the Bible, but in the Bible they do not name the name.
I know what Joe's saying. I can hear, and he's full of shit.
He's just saying that the Bibles we have it today does not name the name. You know the name.
Because of course they don't, because they translated it Lord.
Well,
and if he don't read my
papers,
he'd read
lie. That's what he's trying to tell you. Somebody absconded with the word of the name of our God.
Nobody absconded with the word. We've always had it with us.
I know that, but it's not in the Bible today. It's not in the Bible as we have it written today. Somebody took it out. It's there, but somebody took it out. Do we have to go to William Fink and find out what this name is? Well, maybe
it's
so.
It's in all the ancient manuscripts.
Well,
Joe won't open his eyes.
But it's
Yahweh
not there
is
now.
The name.
It's not there
Christ.
Now.
Christ is the name, Joe.
So the only reason I don't understand, Bill, because if we would have that name, I think it would be things would be
Joe,
different.
Joe, we have the name. Joe, you're not going to say a word and have the world healed, Joe. That's why I tell you, you're looking for a magic spell, yet you're no worse than the damned old ladies that practice witchcraft, yet you're no better off than them.
If it's true that Christ is the name, then why is it that these Christian preachers
word,
out
Joe,
there...
You just said wait, it. You just admitted it. Yet you're a clown.
You're looking
for a magic spell. Oh, if I only had that name and I could say that name, I'd get us out of this mess. This program's over. That's it. On that note, that's it. Nobody can talk but me now. How about that? And that's it. This is the Christogeny Open Forum, and maybe we'll continue this lively discussion next week.